Earth explorers, welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are and why we are here and what we may become if you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Did you know you have existed for many thousands of years? The thought of reincarnation escapes most people, as it did me until I read this book. Your Never-Ending Life is the first in the Universal Learning Series from Sandy Andrew. Search your higher mind, find your soulmate, and know that you are never alone in this world. The treasures of the eternities are yours, and your first step is to read the book. Click the banner for Your Never-Ending Life by Sandy Andrew at X Squared Radio and order the book today. The foundations of religion and science were used to restore knowledge lost for over 6,000 years in our first book. The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 2, called 2012 and the Harvest of the End Times, brings us vital knowledge for the race of mankind. Have the Watchers returned? What did the Aztecs mean by their ancient predictions for the year 2012? Why is Earth changing so rapidly now before our very eyes? Who were the Shining Ones who lived on the Earth and worked with mankind as they recovered from cataclysms? Who are we? Where did we come from? If you could find a book that answers just one of these questions, you'd buy it. Now there are two in this series that is sweeping the world with its message. Go to arcofmillionsofyears.com. and get your autograph copy today. Now, also available in full audio version. Welcome, Earth Explorers, to X Squared Radio. We are here, coming to you from Louisville, Kentucky. And new location, a little new equipment, and we should sound pretty good. The solar wind tonight is a medium, 426.9 kilometers per second. Little sunspots 961 and 962 are small and round and pose no threat for solar flares. And the coronal hole isn't even pointed at Earth right now. But Venus and Saturn are right next to each other in the western sky, so get out there after the program tonight and send us an email about their appearance. I think you'll be impressed. I also wanted to share a little bit of news with you tonight. There have been almost nightly reports of noctilucent clouds also known as NLCs. These are believed to be caused by ice crystals floating out there about 80 kilometers high, well above normal clouds. We suspect that they were left behind by recent space shuttle launches, but they have been hanging around off and on since the 18th century, so maybe not. A recent space sampling may reveal some more information about them, but it appears that most of Europe and Canada can see these clouds. They appear as very high, wispy blue clouds lighted by the sun long before dawn and well after sunset due to their extreme altitude. Also in the news, a recent report on some things that Al Gore said in his movie. Gore argues that Greenland is in rapid meltdown and that this threatens to raise sea levels by 20 feet, which would not be very good news for those people living in Florida or Texas. But according to a 2005 study in the Journal of Glaciology, the Greenland ice sheet is thinning at the margins and growing inland, with a small overall mass gain. In late 2006, researchers at the Danish Meteorological Institute reported that the past two decades were the coldest for Greenland since 1910. Gore claims the Antarctic ice sheet is melting because of global warming, yet the January 14, 2000 issue of Nature magazine reported Antarctica as a whole has been dramatically cooling for decades. This could be backed up by snow in Johannesburg last year, 5 inches of snow. Kind of funny statistics coming around, even as recent as September 2006. Satellite measurements of the Antarctic ice sheet showed significant growth between 1992 and 2003. And the UN Climate Change Panel reported in February 2007, just 4 months ago, that Antarctica is unlikely to lose any ice mass during the remainder of the century. Well, we're going to find out for sure next summer during the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition when we go up there and break ice for 6 days to get to a place no one has ever been to before. So we'll let you know about all of that when we get there. So, and you also want to be aware that you can pick up your copy of the Inner Earth Expedition Part 1. You can pick it up at Amazon.com. Just do a search for Inner Earth. Or, of course, you can pick it up at X Squared Radio at X2-Radio.com or at Phoenix Science Foundation's website at PhoenixScienceFoundation.org and go to the online store link there. So take care of all those. We're going to have our call-in lines open all night long because of our guest. And we'll let you know who that is in just a second. So here are the numbers, 877-876-5227, toll-free in the U.S. Anywhere in Canada, 888-810-8322. And anywhere else on planet, off planet, inside the planet, if you can get to a cell phone tower, you can reach us at 530-876-3222. Last week we had David Sarita on the program. All I can say is, wow, go back and listen to that archive. You're going to learn a lot about his new film, From Here to Andromeda. And next week we'll be at the Science, Spirit, and Earth Transformation Conference in Trout Lake. If you want to find out about that, you can follow the link at X Squared Radio at x2-radio.com, or you can go to eseti.org. And there's still time to get into that conference. If you've got camping gear and you want to see a UFO, this is the hottest spot in the country. And this is also backed up by the likes of Art Bell. So trust me, if you want to have an experience with a UFO, now's the time and that's the place. You'll get to hear something interesting for sure because we're going to do our show from there on Sunday evening. And this week, we have the indomitable Steve Bassett. Who can say enough about my friend Steve? He has been at the front of the front for UFO disclosure. And what you will find out tonight is the latest of these efforts. Please welcome with me Stephen Bassett. How are you, Steve?
Brooks, it's great to be with you.
Oh, this is awesome. Now, you just recently completed a conference in New York, right?
Yeah, it was a nice little event, first time, in the East Village. Jeremy Vanney was the principal person behind it. Bill Burns of UFO Magazine co-sponsored, gave it some good promotion. And what's interesting about this conference is that Jeremy is a contactee, and he's part of a group of contactees that are hanging out, I guess you say, with each other. It's a big city, a lot of people. And, of course, Manhattan is also the home of Bud Hopkins, probably the best-known researcher on contactee abduction in the world. So there's a lot of people that have gone to see him. There have been support groups. So there's kind of a community of contactees there. And Jeremy is of a generation double X, right? Two generations removed from me, I'm sorry to say. And he's trying to reach out to them. So it's kind of a multimedia event, and they had it at one of the art theaters, and they had some art shows. Some wonderful artists there. Melissa Reed presented. She's a beautiful lady, has some great art, and there were several other showings. And then they had a little thing at one of the local, you know, basement hangouts, which I can tell you I've never been in one. And where, you know, three or four bands will play in the evening, and it's wild and crazy. It's another scene, but it's part of their scene, and he's trying to bring people together there. So it was fun to do. It got some press, got written up in the Sun, got written up, I think, in one other paper, and it was nice. And I hope to see it expand over the next couple of years and become a regular event.
Now, how many years has that event been going on? What's the name of the event?
No, this is the first year. It's brand new. It's called the Culture of Contact multimedia event, and it's their very first year. So we must wish them well and hope that their audience will grow next year.
Wow, that's awesome. And it was
East Village,
New York.
Manhattan.
So are there a lot of UFO appearances in New York, like in D.C.?
A lot of UFO what now?
A lot of UFO appearances. Are there
You mean sightings?
Yeah, sightings.
You know, they occasionally happen. Big cities like Washington, D.C. and New York have such huge ambient light that it's extremely difficult to see anything. So, by and large, it's very rare to see a significant sighting over a major city at night because of this lighting. At night, okay. Now, recently we had a sighting at the O'Hare Airport, quite remarkable, but that was in the daytime. The Phoenix Lights, of course, was at night, but pretty big deal, so it was hard to miss it. There have been some sightings in D.C. occasionally. They had an unusual one back in July of 2002. But in general, you don't have them over cities much. That doesn't mean they're not there. It just means that it's very hard to see. And Lord knows, if people, given the millions of people that are in these cities, if many of them would buy night vision binoculars and really get out, they might surprise themselves. But if you want to see unusual things in the sky, generally you've got to go to the west and into the rural areas where the sky is clear and crisp, and unusual events are obvious. This is one of the reasons, though, why a sort of a mistaken mythology has grown. It grew up, though I think it's less obvious now, that somehow these craft are only seen in rural areas by people that live in little grass huts and stuff. I mean, it's ridiculous, but it's understandable, because generally it's out in those areas where the sky is quite clear, and if something makes an unusual maneuver, you're much more likely to pick it up.
Well, I remember in the not-too-distant past, Paul Hellyer saying that UFOs were as plentiful in the sky as airliners are. If we could just look up and see them, we'd see them.
They probably should clarify that. It's a significant clarification. He said they were as real as the airliners in the sky.
Uh-huh.
That's a bit different, but quite significant.
Yeah, that is quite significant, and quite a bit different than it was reported in the press here in this country.
If there's an easy mistake they could make. What was important about Hellyer, former Minister of Defense during Lester Pearson's time, this is back in the 60s, and Deputy Prime Minister under Pierre Trudeau, 82 now, extremely sharp, writing a book, just got married. is that he arrived at his views on this subject simply by looking and reading about the issue. And not just one book, as some have claimed, like he read one book and made up his mind. It's not true. He's read a number of books and talked to some people. He does have some connections, some military connections. And simply intellectually arrived at the conclusion that, well, there's just no other explanation for this, but there's extraterrestrial. This is how I arrived at that conclusion. I've never seen anything. I've arrived at a lot of conclusions about things I've never seen. But there's an intellectual exercise. Unfortunately, the American press, the American entire American academic community, and a significant portion of the government is unable to exercise this kind of intellectual acumen. An unfortunate thing, because this lack of exercise also manifests itself in a whole other range of things that they should be doing well, but are not. But the fact is that Hellyer did that, and I think it's a call to others who have figured it out too. Smart people in government, Canada, U.S., U.K., and elsewhere, who know intellectually that these things are real. But they don't want to speak up because they're, for whatever reason, content to allow their governments to remain to keep them out of the picture and carry on this issue in secrecy, which is just not acceptable to me.
Well, it does seem so illogical that you have a subject matter like, okay, the existence of UFOs. I think recently they published that 70% of society worldwide believes that UFOs do exist. I mean, I don't think there's a political issue at all, whether you want to talk about abortion or you want to talk about border control, that 70% of the people agree on. And yet politicians won't really come out and say, you know, well, of course they're real, and of course we're going to have complete disclosure on it.
Well, let's put this in perspective. I'll use a bigger number. 80 to 90% consistently polled in the first world countries, particularly the U.S., that the government's not telling the truth.
Sure.
And in the U.S., 50% poll, a pretty high number, like 70% poll that they believe is life in the universe, E.T. like somewhere. And that's about the number. And then 50% typically poll in the U.S. now that, well, they actually believe that some of that essentially life is here now, and that's what some of those UFOs are. These are big numbers. So recently we had a huge to-do here in the U.S. regarding immigration and legislation. And the American people were consistently polling that they wanted to go a certain way on this immigration issue in the 60 percentile range. The Democratic Party and some of the Republican Party decided to go against that and basically had their head handed to them.
They did.
They put a huge bill together, and it never made it. Flopped in the Senate. Big news, big deal. It's all over the, in fact, news the last few days in the United States, affecting the presidency, legacy, yada, 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 yada.
Oh, there's a lot of name-calling on this one.
Sure. So there's an example of where, all right, the government acted against the population on an issue where they were polling. The people are polling at this issue, in the UFO issue, 50% think they're actually here already. 60 to 70% believe it is life in the universe. 90% thinks the government lying. And the government does nothing. Absolutely nothing. Haven't had a hearing since 1968. Won't even address the issue. Won't speak to it. And the reason that they can do this is that, unlike the immigration issue, where you do have, it's known, yeah, there is an immigration issue, and we have to take a position on it, and the various parties have discussed it and talked about it openly. The government has claimed there's no issue at all, and the entire members of the Congress, with almost no exceptions, have gone along with that, probably in many cases knowing full well it was a completely bogus position. In other words, there's sort of a de facto agreement, or at least compliance, with an utterly ludicrous and bogus position that's being put forward, not by really a formal executive order, but in fact by a group of inside management types that are not prepared to let this go and seem to be operating somewhat ex officio. It's an outrageous, unbelievable situation that is beyond anything that we've ever seen in our lifetime, and certainly in the history of the country. Nothing quite like it. And it's only because the issue is so incredibly important and so profound and so upsetting to some of the bureaucrats, though I think for the wrong reasons, that they would even dare to maintain an embargo on this issue for 60 years. But they've done so well at creating this embargo, creating walls of ridicule, ghettoizing the issue, ghettoizing the people, and creating this ludicrous Lewis Carolian reality, that they have bamboozled, at least, or managed to cajole, or just allow a whole lot of people put their head in the sand and so that the entire academic community in the United States, the entire fundamental top-end major media in the United States, and the entire political leadership have laid down on what is easily the biggest issue in the world and the most important news story of all time. That is just staggering. It's just absolutely staggering. So if people are upset over the fact that the government went against their wishes on the immigration bill, wait till they find out. Wait till they find to get the goods on what the government chose to do on this issue since 1947.
Well, you know, it just staggers my mind, because I know a lot of journalists and a lot of journalist wannabes, and there really isn't any place, unless you want to go to Baghdad and be on one of the cable channels, where you can really make a name for yourself as a journalist, like you could during the Vietnam War or the Korean War or something like that. It would seem to me, with the endless sea of journalist wannabes, that one of them would see a Pulitzer, one of them would see global fame and unbelievable revenue from the idea that they could successfully investigate and expose the cover-up of the greatest discovery since fire.
Well, guess what? If it was just up to the reporters, and I know a few, they might go for it. But it doesn't work that way. Bob Woodward and Bernstein got on the Watergate thing simply because the editor at the time, Bradley, decided maybe he wanted to put somebody on it, and these guys were handy. And so he tossed them into the mix, put the two together, and off they go and made history. But if there had been somebody else in the room, it might have been somebody else. Or if he'd chosen not to go forward, Woodward and Bernstein wouldn't even know, even heard of them today. Reporters don't go forward unless editors allow them to. And editors don't allow them to unless the ownership of the paper wants to go there. And at the top end, Washington Post, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Los Angeles Times, unfortunately, it is my belief that the owners of these papers, the publishers, have an understanding with the government that they will not go there. And they have, in their own way, imparted that understanding to the editors, who then will not allow the reporters to go forward, which is to say that the major papers in the United States are in the tank on this issue in one form or another. This then becomes the biggest journalistic scandal in the history of American journalism.
Well, of course it does, because what keeps this nation free, other than community-run public schools, is the press. That's what keeps the nation free. And when the press is in control of, you say, the government, I'm going to say what government, then we've lost our freedom.
Yeah, and if you go to my main website, which is paradigmresearchgroup.org, paradigm, very important word, got to learn how to spell it. It's going to be big in the 21st century. P-A-R-A-D-I-G-M, paradigmresearchgroup.org. And you go to the main site, the PRG site, you'll find my Media Watch section. It's called Media Watch, and it's the news archive. Right there alone, I have 1,300 articles that have been in mainstream press, no tabloids, no alternative press, mainstream news, both print and some internet, that have addressed this issue, talked about UFOs. 1,300 articles. And what you find is that at the basic level of local papers and regional papers and what have you, they cover this phenomena, cover conventions and conferences and books and things, and generally get into it, and sometimes with some very good stories. But then what you find is that when you look at the high-end papers, where people look for the big stuff, right? You know, you're not going to pick up the Wichita paper to find out if there's extraterrestrials here. You're going to look for that to be in the New York Times. It all changes. And this is a result of, one, the corporate conglomeration of the major dailies and their ownership in many cases by companies that may have connections to the government, which is far more true in the major networks, which have always also laid down on this issue. Big corporations that are involved in government defense contracts owning the media, and people are surprised that if the government didn't want this to go forward, that those big organizations would lay down on the ET issue. It's not surprising at all. So you can see that the reporters want to cover it and will cover it if they're allowed, but they're not allowed at the level of the major papers. Terry Hansen put this out very nicely in a book called Missing Times, News Media Complicity in the UFO Cover-Up. I recommend people get that book. In fact, I recommend anybody in the media get that book, and they will understand how it's possible that there's ETs all over the planet right now in the skies and in some cases on the ground, and they're not reading it in the New York Times. Terry pretty much explained that. So again, this issue is compromised the government, compromised the press, it's compromised editors and publishers, and is undermining, I think, the proper relationships that should exist. And the effect, the combined effect of the corporatization and conglomerization of major media, plus the willingness of these top ends, corporate-owned media, to go in the tank on certain issues with the government, is fundamentally undermining the role of the Fourth Estate in keeping the republic sound, which is one of the reasons why the American Constitutional Republic is not sound, and in fact, in my opinion, starting to literally unravel.
Well, it makes complete sense. You can see the symptoms of it when you talk about major newspapers like the New York Times or the L.A. or the Washington or the Boston. Here's what you see. You'll see a few articles, and you'll even see the number of people that subscribe to the paper. But that's not where the money is. The money is in the advertising, and the advertising is largely done by large corporations. Those corporations determine what is and is not written in that paper.
They can. They don't always, but they can. They, obviously, if they try to influence all the time, it would be so apparent, it would be obvious, and it would get ludicrous. So they don't in most cases. But they will exercise, I think, their influence in certain cases, and that's all it takes to create serious problems for the country.
Yeah, because what you get written in the press over and over and over again is Chapter 1. Chapter 1, Chapter 1, Chapter 1, over and over again. There's never a Chapter 2. There's no follow-up. There's no...
Right.
You know, people get tired of reading Chapter 1 of the story from witness after witness after witness. We're waiting for Chapter 2. This is... And that's why in May of 2001, when Dr. Stephen Greer did his National Press Club thing, that I saw it live. I mean, that was just phenomenal. I thought, oh, boy. We're ready. It's the ice is cracking, the glass is breaking, these people are not going to go to the grave with these secrets, they're going to come out and tell everything. And then it went quiet again.
Well, it went quiet because of 9-1-1. I mean, it was only four months, literally to the day, that the May 9th press conference at the National Press Club, where witness testimony was brought forward in the most systematic way ever, that the 9-1-1 event occurred, and that was the end of that. So what can you do, right? It's a general statement about the modern circumstances that we now look at, both, well, just around the world, is that at any time there's about to be progress in something, somebody will blow something up. And we need to get used to that, because instead of reacting in a typical fashion where, okay, somebody blew something up, we have to all start over again, we have to return to the beginning, we have to do this, we have to say, look, somebody's going to blow something up, they're always going to do that, let's just move on, get things done anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not doing that.
I agree with you completely. I mean, but here's, when you look at this over and over again, whether it's the war in Bosnia knocking the little blue dress off the press, or whether it's 9/11 knocking UFO disclosure off the press, it seems as though somebody down at Wars R Us always has a little manila envelope with some kind of campaign that the higher-ups can use to get the unwanted press out of the paper and replace it with something that will just bury it for months or even years.
I don't believe in the big things that they're able to do that. I think they don't have that kind of influence and power. In other words, they didn't cook up 9-1-1 for a specific reason, such as knocking issues out of the press. There's a lot more there, much deeper, much more complex. However, there are areas where they are essentially using up their media capital, using up their money and resources and talent on nothing. And I think they do that deliberately. Because if they didn't, they really would have to do a lot more news, and it would cost a little bit more money, and it would be more than ruffle feathers. And I'm referring to the Paris Hilton phenomenon. If you look at MSNBC, which has the potential to be a strong network, they have enormous amount of crime programs. It's all crime programming. You go into the prisons, they got murder mysteries from, you know, happened to some family in the Midwest. It's like the old crime magazines of the 1940s and 50s. And they've got top talent doing this stuff. And they're wasting cameras and writers and producers on nothing. And then, of course, they spend unbelievable amounts of time making worldwide celebrities out of people like Paris Hilton and Anna Nicole Smith and others. They've literally embarrassed themselves. They've cockaed on themselves is what they have. It's hard to watch. It's painful. When you know the resources and the money that goes behind these networks such as CNN and Fox News and MSNBC and CNBC, well, CNBC less so. It's mostly about the economics and the markets, and they basically stick to that, and they do a really good job. And then, of course, the network news and is ridiculous. They're still doing half-hour shows after, what, 35 years? Most of the magazine shows, like Dateline in 2020, have turned into nothing but pulp. They're throwing the careers, though they get paid well, they're throwing the careers and the lives and the resources and the money of just thousands and thousands of good people down the drain, covering nonsense, while the world is pretty much coming apart at the seams. It is beyond bad. And there are people that have tried to write this up and tried to get this across the American people, but it's hard to do. And we're so used to it. We're used to that 18 minutes of pathetic news on NBC or CBS every night, and we're used to seeing the ridiculous stories endlessly covered. It's not unusual to turn on cable news, and I watch it constantly, and watch all three networks, CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News, cover for an hour or longer a car being chased by the police in some city like Los Angeles. All three networks working off the group feed, coming from a helicopter for one solid hour, simply covering a car that's being chased by the police, perhaps because it might have an accident and create a bit of news. This is simply... Edward R. Murrow would probably just come back and shoot himself if he saw this. And it's this waste of resources. It makes it difficult for the American people to get any information about war, about peace, about candidates, about issues, about the party platforms, about extraterrestrials, about the oil issue, whether there's a lot, whether there's a little, about the complex stuff that you can find if you go deeper and deeper into the more esoteric magazines. But in terms of the American people, they're fed garbage. Absolute, unmitigated, 24/7 garbage. They're turning off their TVs, they're throwing their cable away, but that just means they're going to be less informed. So we've got a major problem that any first world nation would normally face if it enters an age of indulgence where everybody's got a little too much to eat, a little too much money to spend, and a little too much fun to be had. And they're starting to let the country go. They're letting the social contract go. And everyone's going along with this, particularly at the corporate level, because they're making plenty of money off it. And if they can make money off of people's stupidity, they'll do it. And so we got a situation in the country where we're kind of ripe for some cataclysmic, transforming event that probably won't take us where we want to go and create a whole lot of foo-fah. And we have really nobody to blame but ourselves, because I believe American people have always had the ability not only to transform the Congress, but transform the media. They will do what Howard Beale did in that wonderful, movie, Network, and they will open up their windows, they'll scream out there, I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore, but they really will mean it, and they will go, and they will kick butt. They will fire people. They will impeach people. They will force people to resign. They will have them indicted. They will have them convicted. They will get their Congress back. They will get their media back. But they had better do it pretty soon, or this is not going to be a first world country anymore. They're going to wake up one morning in a second world country, and they're going to say, how did that happen? Well, the fact is, it's happening right now before their eyes.
It would seem, though, that if there is this mind-numbing repetition, like, oh, my God, what are the people down at Fox News doing? Wait a minute, they're covering some car chase in L.A. Quick,
sure.
get a feed on that. We don't want them to scoop us on the car
mm-hmm.
chase. It would seem that somebody in a back room could say, you know what, we're sick and tired of a 4.5 market share here. Let's do Chapter 2.
Let's get huge. Let's go for it.
Yeah.
It's a self-contained kind of situation that unless somebody breaks the political pinata open in Washington and we get some heavy hitters out there in front of camera saying, look, there's an ET presence here. We've been not dealing with this. We've got to get on it. Unless that happens, there's kind of a stasis there. I don't think we can break out of it. It's going to be very difficult. Do you know that Anna Nicole Smith's death got many, many, many times more coverage than the death of the Pope?
Well, yeah, and that...
And there's a billion Catholics in the world?
Well, besides their being immensely better looking than the Pope, I really can't think of any reason other than, you know, this is the latest at Hollywood and Vine. But I can tell you this, the documentary that we shot last summer with Global Photos Associates aired in Japan. And they have 125 million people in that country, and our documentary drew a 9.5 share. Mm-hmm. And almost 17,000 people called in the studio, and that documentary was voted number one for the year of 2007 in the Genes of Galileo Science Contest. Now, lots of people are interested in this subject about new Earth exploration. Lots of people.
And a lot of other subjects, and in other countries, not the U.S., they get a little better chance of getting access to that information at the high end as opposed to the middle to low end.
I don't know. Look at Discovery Channel. Look at Sci-Fi. They've got a Discovery.
That's not high end. That's mid-level.
That's all cable stuff.
It's mid-level. It's not quite the same thing. Look, I'll take it. You know, I mean, there's over 100 UFO documentaries in the libraries of Discovery, A&E, and History. And Learning Channel, to the extent I think it's still around. And they've been played many, many times. But it's intriguing, there's a tremendous amount of provocative, even mind-numbing material in those documentaries, and yet the major news and national public radio and public broadcasting, they don't pick up on any of it. It's sort of like, I guess they think that the history and the channels are just running this stuff as filler, right? And there's nothing there. And so the fact that it doesn't get kicked up from the History Channel tells you right then that the fix is in. Right. So what? Look, National Public Radio is, of all of the entities I've dealt with in 11 years, right, the most impenetrable, difficult, obstinate, adamantine media has been National Public Radio.
Sure.
They're supposed to be the one that doesn't have the commercial hook, and so they can deal with whatever they want to in the public interest. They won't touch this issue with a 10-foot pole. Why? Because they get a little bit of money from the government. They don't want to lose that. And they also get a lot of money from those standard philanthropists that are always worried about which way the silver is placed on the table and what their reputation is in the New York Times, style section. And so they're afraid to lose that money. And so the National Public Radio is completely out of the picture on this issue, and by and large that also goes to PBS. So the two non-commercial major, quote, in the interest of the public media in this country are in fact the most compromised on this issue, not so much out of what we'll say an agreement with the government as out of simple cowardice.
Well, sure. I mean, look at the opportunity that Peter Jennings had. Look at the press, the hype that he had prior to his special on UFOs, and he could have run some really good, irrefutable proof in his special. He had the market share that night.
Yeah, but they had a good share.
He dropped
the
ball.
The first hour was strong, and then he died.
Through, yeah.
What can you do? And they shut down the PJ Productions, basically shut that whole thing down. And they're sitting there with hundreds of, scores of hours of unused footage, which I would love to get hold of, and one day I may try to go get it, that could be used in other documentaries. Now, his death had nothing to do with the fact that he went into the ET issue. However, let me point out that Peter Jennings did that documentary, went on other networks, right, to promote it.
Right.
And you don't do that unless you're serious about that, what you're doing there. You just don't do it. Look, it's unusual to do anyway, but to do it on a subject matter like that, where there's a much greater risk of Peter getting some blowback on that, shows that at the end of his life, and it's not clear whether he knew he had serious cancer before he went out on the promotion on the doc. It's not clear. The sense you got was that he didn't know about the cancer until after the doc was out there. I'm not so sure about that, but really don't know. But clearly, why was he promoting this in that way? It was a lot of risk to him. Jennings, by the way, I've been sending stuff to Jennings and ABC News and all those people for years. I mean, they've gotten plenty of stuff sent to them, and there have been meetings. Other of my colleagues have met with them. So it's not like they don't know about it, and it's not that they haven't had books and papers and stuff shoved under their door. At some point, he decided to make a move on this, and he was serious about it. And while the documentary, I think, was weak in some areas, it raised some extremely compelling points that could have been picked up on. So Peter made a move there, and it ended up being the last serious journalism he did in his life. Now, has he been acknowledged for that? Has anybody, you know, talked about that, written about that? No. Again, they go right back into the tank. And I include in that the whole range. You know, Ted Koppel, all of them. They go right back into the tank. They don't pick up on it. They didn't follow up on it. This is a disgrace. And let me tell you, when this thing finally blows, and it will blow probably very soon, the number of people who are going to have egg on their face and caca on their legacy, who are going to spend a good deal of the rest of their lives answering questions of how they missed this, blew this, or tanked on this, is a very, very long list. And I don't want to be in their shoes. It isn't going to be fun for them. Because most people, if they're going to try to, you know, BS their way out of it, it's not going to fly. We've got too much evidence. It's all on tape. It's all in the internet. It's all down on paper. We know exactly where they stood, what they said, and what they did and didn't do. And when this thing blows, these people are going to have to account for it. And it's just a disgrace. They violated their oaths as journalists. They violated their oaths as members of Congress. In some cases, they violated their oaths as members of the executive. And they're going to have to answer. They're hoping that this truth embargo will go on long enough until they can leave the scene, in other words, die. It's been going on for 60 years. It'll go for 60 more. Not a chance. This thing is hanging by a thread. And everybody that's listening to your show needs to know that they could wake up tomorrow to some announcement that there's going to be a major press conference in the afternoon, and this embargo will be over. They need to get ready. Because there's a lot of implications in business and in the lives of people, and the more they're ready, the more prepared they'll be. It's a tautology. The sooner they're ready, the more prepared they will be when it finally takes place. And then all these journalists and academics and everybody else can all run around in circles and try to explain away their obstinance, their stupidity, their cowardice, their arrogance, but it won't work.
Well, let's run through a little bit of the foundation here. We were together in Hawaii at the Earth Transformation Conference with Michael Sala. You gave a magnificent slideshow, and in that slideshow, you explained the mathematics behind the odds that there is intelligent life in the universe.
In a metaphorical way.
I showed
how large the universe is, and it's staggering when you kind of see it unravel there.
Let's just take 5 minutes, and if you can, without the slides, because we can't run them on the radio, if you could tell people about how large the universe is, so they can get some idea the possibility of how many planets like Earth there are out there.
Actually, I can do it in less than five. Look,
okay, here we go.
Real simple. The universe is now currently at 15 billion light years on radius, meaning 30 billion light years across. But there's no reason to believe that that's simply a circle around a globe around our telescopes and how far they can see. The universe may be infinite, but nevertheless, in the 30 billion diameter globe that we can see, there are more stars than all the leaves on all the trees on planet Earth, right? That's a lot of stars. There are more galaxies than all the grains of sand on all the beaches. I'm sorry, let me rephrase. In our galaxy, there are more stars than all the leaves on all the trees on the planet Earth.
Gotcha.
All right. That's one galaxy, ours. There are more galaxies in this 30 billion light year diameter sphere than all the grains of sand on all the beaches in the world. Anybody who thinks that we're the only life in the universe is simply silly. All right? And very few people really do anymore. They know there's other life in the universe. Anyone who thinks that we're the only sentient life in the universe is silly. It's ridiculous. It's absurd. It's about the most absurd thing that I can imagine. I can't imagine a more absurd idea. And so an increasing number of people way up in the high percentile, 70-80%, know that, yeah, we're not alone in the universe. There's other life. There's other life. And there's other sentient life. Okay, fine. So that's taken care of. That's a done deal. So that just leaves one question, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Have any of those sentient life come here? Now, at this point, the scientists all just sort of start blathering about Einstein's theory of relativity and speed of light and all that other stuff, and that's all very wonderful. But actually, the simplest way to know if any of that life is to come, has come here is to look for evidence that it's come here, right? And that evidence is everywhere. It's been amassed since 1940s by hundreds of researchers, thousands of researchers. It's huge. It would fill volumes, documents, photographs, videotape, direct personal accounts, radar logs, pilot sightings, on and on and on and on and on. And so the evidence that something extraordinary has been here, clearly not human, for 60 years is massive. So I guess that closes the deal. There's clearly life in the universe, there's clearly other sentient life, and there's evidence that it's been here. Bingo. We've got ETs in the sky. And that's the short, the long and the short of it. And any high school student with a reasonably good mind, some common sense, and a little bit of physics and astronomy could figure this out by the age of 14. However, the entire academic, political, and political press community filled with a whole bunch of highly educated, quite pompous, somewhat egotistical, mostly men, haven't figured it out. Or if they have, they haven't got the guts to say so. And that's where we stand. It's that simple. Now, in a visual presentation, it's extremely powerful. And just in words, it's not so powerful. But if you go on the net and simply Google cosmology, size of the universe, you can find these images. And you can find some of the incredible images of galaxy clusters and so forth. And you realize, hey, look, come on, folks, let's grow up. Right? We're one little planet filled with some interesting life. We're kind of special. But we're just a grain of sand in a vast universe. And the idea that we're alone is absurd. And the idea that our science is the limit of science and that nobody can get here from there is absurd. But more absurd is the fact that we've proven the case, the researchers have done their job, and the governments of the world that consider themselves so sophisticated, so wise, so parental, they take care of us like we're little children, that they, right, are going to decide what we know about this issue, and they will keep secrets about this from us in our best interest, because they're so wise, so effective, so highly competent. It is about as absurd as the idea that we're alone. So we need a lot less absurdity in our governance. We need a lot less mendacity. We need some truth, some common sense, some transparency. Possibly we'll start to make progress again. But and this applies to a lot of areas, not just the ET area, but I think the ET area, the ET issue, is the one that could burst the bubble, open up the vault, get things going again. So if we can break this embargo finally and get the government to finally confirm the ET presence, I think it will open the door, and a lot of people are going to rush through that opening, and they're going to start cleaning house. And what I mean by that is going to air out the dirty laundry, air out the basement, bring out the goods, which is sort of happening right now. We're seeing a lot of documents being dumped all over the world right now. And maybe start moving things towards a more fixable, rational, and doable approach to not only national governance, but also world and diplomatic relations, and which right now are just in abysmal state.
Yeah, they certainly are. I mean, you don't have to be a brain surgeon to look at the news today and see that the resources that we have on our planet are very plentiful. They're just being completely mismanaged, which kind of brings me to my next question we'll lead into the next hour with. You keep saying the word they, this pronoun, and I keep thinking to myself, is he talking about the government? Is he talking about the ownership of the news media? Is he talking about multiple governments, or is he talking about, and this is probably a bigger question, and we'll get into this as far as you want to go tonight, is there a body of rulers that crosses governmental lines, crosses nationalities, crosses sovereignties, and controls resources such that they actually can choke down the accessibility, the access to technology that could not be worth millions or billions, could be worth trillions, and could actually make or break the survival of the human race on this planet? Is it that big?
It could be the difference between survival or extinction, and what price do you put on that? It's worth more than even trillions.
Sure.
One of the great tragedies, I call it tragedy, not tragedy, one of the most important issues and significant aspects of the ET Truth embargo is the fact that we're pretty sure that behind that embargo, sequestered behind that embargo, is 60 years of research and engineering on ET technology. And there has been a lot of progress, but it is not permitted to be used in the civilian sector, which is to say it's only been available for weaponry. A little of it has been sort of splashed around, which has helped our commercial high-tech industries over the years, fine. But the big stuff, the energy and the propulsion, is not allowed out. And so we have to fend for ourselves while this stuff sits in secret labs deep underground in the western parts of the United States and elsewhere. This is one of the most important aspects of the issues. While 20 to 25 to 30,000 children under the age of 16 die every day unnecessarily from either lack of water, lack of food, or lack of medicine, almost related to malnutrition or malnutrition-related diseases like malaria. That number is, by the way, quite correct. 20 to 30,000, it's seasonal. It depends on the season. That when you have bad weather, more die. Let's just pick 25,000. That's basically eight World Trade Centers a day of children. Not bond traders, but children die every day because we don't have our act together enough to give them a chance to live. That's just children. Plenty of adults also die. We have emerging diseases. We have environmental tipping points coming. All this stuff. None of the technology, none of the implications of ET technology is available to address that because the embargo would be threatened if it were allowed out. People would say, where did that come from? Where'd you get that? And if they didn't get a satisfactory explanation, it could end the truth embargo. And the truth embargo in the minds of some people is sacrosanct. In fact, secrecy itself has become sacrosanct. There are people in this government that worship secrecy. They have some sort of an altar to it in their homes and offices. And once a day, they kneel down before the secrecy altar and pray to it. And this is another huge problem in the United States. Secrecy has become a religion, a disease, a metastatic cancer. It's not good. It's unhealthy. But it helps certain groups. How would you say, do their thing, and their thing increasingly is not our thing. And so, once again, the ET issue spills over into much more complex and equally important areas of dysfunction and malfeasance in America. And that's the thing I didn't see coming when I got in this field 11 years ago as a lobbyist and a political activist and created the Political Action Committee and all that stuff, and just took on the political
because
stuff.
When you were making your case before somebody who you thought could do something about it in the government, and you were excited, I mean, like, hey, can you believe what we found out? Look at this evidence right here. Look at these pictures. And they look at you like, yes, and we're not going to tell anybody, are we, Steve?
Yeah, at the end of the movie Contact, after Ellie goes through all the stuff that she went through and comes back, they don't really believe her, and yet in the end it points out that, wait a minute, she had 18 hours of static film in her camera, something did happen, and immediately it was covered up. So even Sagan alluded to the concept of cover-up in the movie Contact. Covering up, secrecy, all this stuff has become endemic, and we're doing it to everything. We classify everything, secretify everything, and so consequently we can't get anything done. We spend a fortune just keeping tabs of all the stuff that we've made secret, and we really can't do that. And then when systems break down, you can't get to the information that would allow you to fix it. And so secrecy becomes literally a cancer. It is a cancer in our society. We have several actually right now. And it's taken us, it's eaten us up. And the efforts to repair and address this cancer have been just pathetic. I mean, every once in a while, somebody will raise their hand and go, is this good? Perfect example, Patrick Monahan, the great senator who did many good things. At the very end of his career, just before he died, he raised his hand and said, this secrecy thing, I don't think it's good. And he wrote a little book and everything, and it all just disappeared. It was just fluff, went away in no time.
Mm.
There has been no effort for serious secrecy reform in this country in my lifetime, though it's starting to at least, there's a little bit of motion you're seeing. But it's going nowhere. The ET is the train they need to get on. The ET truth embargo is the train the secrecy reformers want to get on, should get on, but they can't get on our train because, or my train, because they believe the government propaganda.
Well, there's no cancer here, just a virus. And if you catch it, you're cured here at X Squared Radio. We're going to end this embargo tonight with my guest, Stephen Bassett. We'll be back with more of X Squared Radio. Did you know you have existed for many thousands of years? The thought of reincarnation escapes most people, as it did me until I read this book. Your Never-Ending Life is the first in the Universal Learning Series from Sandy Andrew. Search your higher mind, find your soulmate, and know that you are never alone in this world. The treasures of the eternities are yours, and your first step is to read the book. Click the banner for Your Never-Ending Life by Sandy Andrew at X Squared Radio and order the book today. There is something about to happen to the Earth. You know it. You can feel it. Well, the creators of the Kill Shot have collected the evidence for you in a stunning new documentary called The Horizon Project. The first DVD is now in print, and you can get it by clicking on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio. Believe me when I tell you this may be the most important video production you will ever see. This is destined to air on the Discovery Channel or the History Channel, but you need the uncut version. Click the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio and get your copy today. Many people write us here at X Squared Radio wanting to know how to get prepared for the coming cataclysms. Well, we have been successful in acquiring the best affiliate in the world for emergency preparedness. NitroPak has been around for 18 years and can provide everything you need for life. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a year's supply of excellent quality foods and supplements for a single person or a whole family. Don't be left without the essentials of life. NitroPak is the name. Click the banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. The foundations of religion and science were used to restore knowledge lost for over 6,000 years in our first book. The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 2, called 2012 and the Harvest of the End Times, brings us vital knowledge for the race of mankind. Have the Watchers returned? What did the Aztecs mean by their ancient predictions for the year 2012? Why is Earth changing so rapidly now before our very eyes? Who were the Shining Ones who lived on the Earth and worked with mankind as they recovered from cataclysm? Who are we? Where did we come from? If you could find a book that answers just one of these questions, you'd buy it. Now there are two in this series that is sweeping the world with its message. Go to arcofmillionsofyears.com and get your autographed copy today. Now also available in full audio version.
This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio. Welcome back to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. In here, the results are always positive. We're going to bring it to you. Imagine the shock of growing up in a loving family with people you call mom and dad, and then suddenly learning that you are actually adopted. Well, this same sense of shock came as scientists announced that the sun, the moon, our planet, and its siblings were not born into the familiar band of stars known as the Milky Way galaxy. But we actually belong to a strange formation with the unfamiliar name of the Sagittarius Dwarf Galaxy. Using volumes of data from the 2-micron All-Sky Survey, a major project to survey the sky in infrared light led by the University of Massachusetts, the astronomers are answering questions that have baffled scientists for decades and proving that our own Milky Way is consuming one of its neighbors in a dramatic display of ongoing galactic cannibalism. The study published in the Astrophysical Journal is the first to map the full extent of the Sagittarius galaxy and show in visually vivid detail how its debris wraps around and passes through our Milky Way. Sagittarius is 10,000 times smaller in mass than the Milky Way, so it is getting stretched out, torn apart, and gobbled up by the bigger Milky Way. More proof that Earth is not from around here. You can learn more about that if you want to in The Arc of Millions of Years, Volume 1. You just have to read the chapter called The Union of the Polarity, and you'll find that out for yourself. You can pick that up at X Squared Radio, x2-radio.com, going to the online store. By the way, we have a special going on. Volume 2, hardcover, you can pick up for the same price as the paperback. Also, don't forget the DVD for the Inner Earth Expedition Part 1 with exclusive footage from Tibet, just shot and put in the can in May of this year. You can pick that up as well as at Amazon.com or at the online store at X Squared Radio, and that is with free shipping. So you'll get that shipped anywhere in the world. Free shipping. We want to get that out. And we also want to let you know that in about a week, you will be able to view the entire DVD, the entire film, for less than $5 pay-per-view on the Borderland Network. And that's at tbln.com. And, of course, the link is at X Squared Radio, and it will be everywhere. They are doing a massive ad campaign. So you'll be able to see that film and others, From Here to Andromeda, UFOs, The Greatest Story Ever Denied, and many other movies. But we decided to keep the length of this one at about 31 minutes, because we think that's about where people lose interest in a hardcore documentary. And if you really want to know about what leads people to think the Earth might be hollow, then you need to see this video, because it's going to get you excited about the expedition we have planned for next summer.
Hopefully that's going to take place on schedule. We are speaking right now with a couple of the online cable channels, or with the cable channels and some online TV channels about participating in that project. We're excited about that. My guest tonight is Stephen Bassett. If you are familiar with UFO Disclosure, with the Disclosure Project, with Alfred Lambermont Weber, or with any of our other guests that have been on here that have talked about UFO Disclosure, you cannot go very far or very deep into the subject without running into the name Stephen Bassett. His website is paradigmresearchgroup.org. That's P-A-R-A-D-I-G-M, researchgroup.org. Go there. There is enough reading to keep you busy for a month there. It's an extremely informative site, very well laid out. And if you get a chance to see Stephen Bassett present anywhere in the country, don't miss it. We're only going to have him on for a mere 3 hours tonight. But trust me, the man could go for 6 hours uninterrupted, and you would not lose interest. Welcome back, Steve. How are you?
Hanging in there, Brooks.
All right. This hour, let's go ahead and get into this shadow government thing. Now, we've had a couple of guests come on, and we've sort of scratched the surface with this, and we kind of get more personal opinion than we do evidence. But I know that you have got the evidence, and you've definitely got the evidence in your brain at instant recall command. So without getting too far out on the outer rim of conspiracy theory, let's talk a little bit about conspiracy fact. What's going on with the subject of UFO Disclosure?
Well, let me make a point about shadow government. This is a tricky area, and it's consuming a lot of people's time. A lot of people focus on it, even obsess. There have been a number of writers that have tried to get into it. And it really, a better way to refer to it is like what I like to say, Uber authority. That there's a group, or a couple of groups, that sit above everything. And they, like puppeteers, decide which way the world goes and what's going to happen. And what is universal in the attempts to elucidate that is that really no one can name them. There's a name for them in a sense, who they are, where they meet. So that sort of creates a bit of a problem in terms of addressing it, right? How do you deal with people? You don't know where they are. You don't know who they are. You don't know where they meet. So then they drop down a notch or a level below the Uber authority, the ultimate overlord.
Right.
And they get into what we'll call the power groupings. And they refer to entities like the Bilderbergers and the Council for Foreign Relations and so forth.
Right.
And these groups clearly do exist. And they're clearly in the business of thinking about and managing affairs, nations, countries, nations and interaction between countries and so forth. No question about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's to be expected. You couldn't have it any other way. You're gonna have to have this. Somebody better be thinking and managing or got a problem. You don't want 6 billion people here just kind of doing their thing. Trust me. You don't want that. The problem with this level, for me, is not that they exist, right, and therefore, de facto are some sort of evil managers taking us where we don't want to go. The problem is they operate too much in secret. The big issue with the Bilderbergers is all the secrecy. It's not that they exist or meet, but they're not open. They don't bring the cameras in. They don't allow us to see what's going on. And that needs to stop in general. We've got to stop this kind of what we'll call secrecy behind closed door stuff when we're getting people of great power coming together to decide fate for the rest of us poor slobs. In general, we need to get rid of all secrecy groups that get into the area of what we'll call power sharing and power networking. And there is no better example of this than Skull and Bones. The Skull and Bone Society should be absolutely dismantled, completely eradicated, gone, finished, done, right? And there should be no secret societies of that type on any campus in the United States ever again. Because they're not, they're about, you know, behind the scenes networking power so that individuals can kind of give each other a leg up so that they can then get into control positions. And they operate in almost cult-like fashion. It's an embarrassment to Yale. I can't imagine why it's still going on there other than a lot of these guys give Yale a lot of money. So these are the things that disturb me about that. Now when you, then people will look at other entities that simply are odd, right? And sometimes compellingly odd. And probably there's no better example than that than the Bohemian Grove. And I don't know what the hell they're thinking there. But somebody needs to get in there and clean that up too. Because it's an embarrassment. So, do powerful people misbehave? Yeah. Are there pedophile cults? Probably. Do people that have money and influence and are capable of doing anything they want do pretty awful things and get away with it? Yeah. Is that good? No. Do we need more muckraking journalists and heavy investigative journalists to go in and find these people so we can get their butt in jail? Yes. Is there too much secrecy? Yes. Is there a true uber authority, a small group of individuals that really control everything? I doubt it. There are plenty of powerful people in this world, plenty, thousands and thousands of them, and they get together in various ways all the time. Look, when Bill Gates sits down to have lunch with Warren Buffett, there's $80 billion sitting at the table. Okay, these are powerful guys. And they could sit down and have lunch, and they could come up with a couple of ideas and turn the U.S. economy on its ear. Wouldn't be hard. But, and if they did, I guess we'd probably not be happy about that. So there's always the potential for people's power to get together and do things we don't like. Here's where my concern is. And, you know, if I'm digressing, forgive me, but this is an incredibly important point.
No, not at all. Keep going.
Right now, the president has a 28% approval rating. The Congress has a 14% approval rating. Right. Recently, people voted in better numbers. They got in the 60 percentile, but in not too distant past, they were voting around a 25 to 30 percentile, meaning 75% of adults weren't voting at all. Trust in government is at an all-time low in general. It's in the 20, 22%. People don't care anymore. They're not bothering. They're disgusted. They're frustrated. They're turned off. Now let's go in other parts of the world, right? You got people living in the totalitarian states or quasi-totalitarian states. Overall, there is a powerful sense amongst the vast majority of humans that instead of developing a world in which they have more what we'll call influence in how their lives are led and how they're governed, in fact, it's getting less. And so the promises of the founding fathers in the American democracy seem to be going the wrong direction here. It's extremely frustrating and upsetting and discouraging. And they have also got lost a handle on really being able to affect change. They feel like they can't elect new people into the Congress. Typically, 90%+ of all incumbents always get reelected. The election, the presidential elections don't go well. The third party candidates don't seem to get much play. We get the same old stuff, tweedledee, tweedledum. The whole sense of frustration and detachment from change is there. And so what is happening is that it's easier for people to look to some deus ex machina explanation than it is for them to reengage their whole political process and start really stirring the pot and making change. And so rather than think, how can we reform American democracy? How can we reform the two-party system? How can we change the congressional representation? How can we change our foreign policy? How can we revitalize the UN? It's easier just to sit back and say, you know, there's an Uber group up there. It's about 6, 8, 9 people. There's probably, you know, the Pope and the Queen of England or whatever, and maybe they shapeshift and maybe they don't shape. It doesn't matter, but they're up there, and they really call the shots. There's nothing we can do about it. Right? They control everything. So it doesn't matter who you elect, doesn't matter if they call the shots. Doesn't matter what how you vote, they call the shots. This is a huge mistake. Not only because it's probably not true, there is no Uber group, but because by doing that, you basically disenfranchise yourself. You're taking yourself out of the game.
Exactly.
You've left the game. You're not even in the dugout. You're on your way into the parking lot to leave the stadium. And so you don't count anymore. You can't make any change.
You know, I think
then things go badly, and then you can blame the Uber group for that. And it's a tautology. I mean, it's a spinning wheel. It goes nowhere.
Yeah. I hear people say all the time, well, it wasn't meant to be, or there were powers that be that kept me from doing it. Let me tell you, I think a good field trip for every American at some time in your early life, make a trip to Washington, D.C. Spend a couple days walking around through the Department of Energy, the Social Security, go around to the different bureaucracies and walk through. When you leave, you'll realize there is no government. There might be a few talking heads on television, but as far as these buildings, it's just office after office after office of little autonomous groups with little autonomous budgets, and there's just numbers and numbers and numbers, and everybody is just trying to keep a job.
And do the best they can in most cases.
Exactly.
You know, we do have governance here, and things do operate. You can get a passport, right?
Right.
You can get, you know, government services of all ranges and sizes.
You can mail a letter, and you can start a farm, and you can get permits for waste disposal. I mean, these bureaucracies do function, but there is no thread, no secret red phone that goes from office to office to which everyone answers and no one speaks about. These are all just ordinary human beings going to work every day doing a job. It is a bureaucracy, and that is, I'm sorry to say, that is the U.S. government.
The failure right now in America is not a failure, believe it or not, of bureaucracy.
Oh.
I don't see it. I mean, bureaucracy can be frustrating at times. It can be inefficient at times. And people get a little bit bored. And I think that right now there is a spillover into the bureaucracy from where the real failure is. That makes it a little harder on them, and they get jaded, and they get cynical, and they're less motivated. So so there is some of that. But overall, it's not a failure. The failure in America today is failure of leadership. It's not a failure of bureaucracy. It's a failure of leadership.
Right.
We have had unbelievably bad leadership since pretty much the early 60s on.
Right.
And I'm including everybody.
And now we're not talking about bad management. We're talking about bad leadership.
Bad leadership, absolutely.
People
bad decisions, bad policies, bad vision,
right thing.
Corruption. And huge mistakes being made with respect to the national security state. The accumulative effect of nearly 40 years of that is on the verge of bringing the United States down. And that is not a discussion we could have tonight. I mean, we could go really deep into that, and it's not my area anyway. You know, nations rise and fall. Last I heard, Rome was still a bunch of ruins. All right? So was Athens. Carthage, the Persian Empire. We could rise and fall, too. We've only been around 225 years, but in the modern era, things tend to rather move quickly. So it might have taken Rome 400 years to fall. We might do it in 40. So the ups and downs, the comings and goings. Well, preferably you prefer not to be going. You prefer to be coming. And preferably you don't want to see the end of, the nations of the world. We'd like to see a transition, perhaps, let them change, modify, and we'd like to see a world that works. So we have to decide what we want to do. And right now, we're at the mercy of simply a bad period of leadership. And it's not just any period. It's the period between the initial explosions of the hydrogen bombs, right, and the emergence of asymmetric warfare in the 21st century. And while the leadership was relatively good in the 40s and 50s, by the 60s it started unraveling. By mid-60s it was really unraveling, and then it just went to hell in a handbasket. We could just pick anybody. It doesn't matter. You know, don't even get me started on Henry Kissinger. I mean, you just pick anybody. And these people are doing damage. They're not helping. They're doing damage. And you just go one down the line. And this nation is so great and so powerful and strong in its fundamentals that it has been able to withstand 40 years of incredibly bad leadership and policies, and it's still standing. But it ain't invincible, and it can only stand so much more. So the point is this. We need to focus not on these Uber groups, which may not exist, but rather focus much closer to home. And say, how can we affect change, you know, in our nation in the appropriate ways, and resist the temptation to believe that it's hopeless? Because it's very likely that's an incorrect assumption, right? And therefore, you're really messing up.
That people do is they drive up to the gas pump, which is real world, and they see that it costs $3.23 for premium gas, and that's what it is here in Louisville. It's probably more than that on the coast, but that's what it is here in Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to cost them $60 to fill up a small vehicle. 20 gallons is really not that large of a vehicle. If you got one of the bigger SUVs with a 30-gallon tank, mm-hmm. you're looking at over $100 to fill up your tank. You're looking mm-hmm. at gasoline costing you $400 or $500 a month. Now, that's a major expense. That's a house payment, for crying out loud, to drive. Now, that's real world.
Right.
And if people could figure out that that price of that gasoline is absolutely artificial compared to the value of what it is they're putting into their tank,
mm.
and they're not setting the price by their demand. The price is being forced at them by a conglomerate that is literally owning nations.
It's worse than that. This is a wonderful analogy, and it's one of the problems that all modern states and the people in them face now. Look, the whole issue of the gasoline is pretty visceral, it's pretty meaty, and it's right there. You go, it costs a lot, you don't have so much money, it hurts, that's it.
Right.
Okay. In order to get a handle on what's really going on, you have to make the effort to look well beyond getting your gas in the morning and look at the larger issue behind it. And not many people are willing to do that. That's why you have governors, and that's why you have representatives, that their job is to, quote, do that and find out the truth and act accordingly. And they're not doing it. If they were, and if they went out and acted accordingly, here is what the American consumer of gasoline would actually find and learn from their own government. The entire oil, peak oil issue, is a complete fraud and always has been.
Oh, absolutely.
I used to know the family. I used to hang around a little bit with the family of a billionaire wildcat oil guy back in the 80s. Now, this is not inside information, but it's basically, I was basically hanging around people in a family where the guy made his billion doing wildcat oil. And what I learned from them is something that's only been confirmed many times since then. There's so much oil out there, they don't know what to do with it all. And it's only a matter of just looking more. It's huge amounts. And there is a interesting economic dilemma, right, that the average consumer doesn't fully understand. When it comes to, quote, resources that can be used up, non-replenishable resources, supposedly, all right, this is a finite planet, right? I mean, it's not infinite. We understand that. So we understand that there's the concept of limits. There is absolutely zero incentive for any corporation to do anything that makes anybody think that there's more oil than there is. Always that there is less.
Right.
And everything they do, they'll tell you that they're going to have a war and it'll make oil more plentiful, and it always makes it less scarce. Doesn't matter. The whole thing's a scam. The game is this. Convince the people that there is less than there is. Sell what there is at the highest possible prices, knowing that you could always get more. Right? And you maximize your profits. That's how the Exxon CEO recently retired with a $400 million exit package. Yeah, you know, just
my
to
goodness.
Keep them comfortable. You don't get those kind of exit packages unless you're in a game that's completely rigged, right? Because basic business, under the usual laws of free market, you can't get that kind of money. But they have the oil is all they want. So they create the sense of shortage, and there is no incentive to do anything else. The only incentive for going and saying what the real reserves could be is that it does jack up the balance sheet. In other words, if an oil company can say, look, you know, we've done this, we've done that, and here's what our real reserves are, and it gives them a little bit more net worth. But they don't care about it. They don't care. Net worth is not where it's at. It's cash flow. And so they would much rather understate how much oil is out there, understate, therefore, reduce the potential for their, quote, net worth line, but then jack the oil price up and create huge revenues. All of this, then, is a fraud, which has cost millions of people their lives, right?
Absolutely.
Because the money's not there. You can't run certain businesses. You can't afford to have the energy costs or not allow you to run desalinization plants and other things that would bring food and water to the third world. So there's no telling how many millions of people have died because the oil companies wanted to play De Beers with oil. De Beers created an artificial diamond market for years and sold them for huge amounts above what they're really worth, which is why I would no more buy a diamond than cut off my big toe. You know,
yeah, like
I don't care how much in love I was.
Yeah, like diamonds are rare.
Yeah, and the same thing is with oil. Now, here is where the catch. Here's the catch. This is when it gets really cool. A number of the people who are in the, quote, military-industrial complex, who are making huge sums of money from oil, directly or indirectly, either by lobbying, by being in the company, by being on the board, are fully aware of the ET presence. They are fully aware that that technology that we have been working on since the 40s would undoubtedly provide vast energy, provide a whole new energy paradigm for us, and essentially eliminate the use of oil in time.
Well, it would eliminate the use of oil as a fuel for an internal combustion engine or for the generation of power.
And they may find some other use for it, I don't know. But overall, its primarily use and value would drop substantially, but not immediately. And so here is the game that's being played. The truth embargo is under enormous pressure. And they're working, in other words, they have to work harder and harder to keep it together, right? Which is fine. Okay. So, but they keep trying. Why do they keep trying? Well, they know this. Look, we got the oil. We got people believing oil is scarce. They're paying huge amounts for the oil. It's generating huge amounts of money into our allies in the Middle East, which keeps them happy. And of course, huge amounts of money to us because there's still a lot of oil being, scraped out of the wells in the United States and Alaska. And if oil is at $60 a barrel, they're getting it too. And it's even more profit for them because it's coming out of their own property. They're not having to pay a residual to the foreign countries. So they're making huge sums of money here. And to the extent that they can hold the truth embargo and keep that ET technology sequestered, they can continue to rake in the dollars off the oil as long as they can, knowing that ultimately it will be replaced long before it ever would have run out in the first place. So there's kind of a double scam going on. If there was no ET technology at all, they would still run this scam, and they would have us thinking that oil was incredibly scarce for another 100 years. Do it. It wouldn't matter. And they'd be richer than God. They'd own planets. These guys would go out and buy moons of Jupiter, and they'd put summer homes up. There's, you know, human greed has no limit. This is one of the fundamental laws of at least our solar system. So that scam would be there regardless. But there's a second scam, and that's the fact that ET technology is there, and that also could affect oil. Look, when disclosure takes place on, say, some Monday in the near future, your listeners out there that have disposable income, you better be sure that you are short oil and long gold. Because if you are short gold and long oil, you're going to lose your tush. Now, gold prices will skyrocket in the uncertainty in the early days of the post-disclosure world, and then they will settle back. Huge money will be made. Just a little tip, send me a check. As far as oil is concerned, yes, oil will plunge because as soon as that ET disclosure is acknowledged, you're going to have people immediately rushing forward and say, okay, where is that technology? People are going to have to listen to them. They're going to put two and two together and say, boy, I don't think those flying saucers were in fact using oil-based engines. And they must be really cool because they can do right angle turns at 30,000 miles an hour. And so if we had that energy, I'll bet I wouldn't have to use oil. And they're going to say, wow, and oil stocks will drop. But then they will bounce back because it's going to take a lot of time. Once the ET tech is finally revealed to the rest of us poor slobs out here, we're just getting along from day to day, for the conversions to take place. And the energy people will immediately take their huge sums of money, and they will be the ones that will bring us the alien technology, and they will still continue to get rich. But the energy that we will probably be paying for in the post-disclosure world, once the ET tech is fully in place and energy is being generated in that form, in the fashion that that these craft are able to generate it, and what other enhancements we can add to it, we'll probably be paying a tenth of a cent on the dollar, maybe even less. In other words, what would cost $1,000 in energy costs would cost a dollar. Now, that's huge. I mean, imagine. Okay. In other words, if it cost $100 to heat your house a week now, it would cost 10 cents. Now, that's pretty cool. And we all want that. That's still 10 cents, and believe me, that's going to generate plenty of money for the energy companies. And more importantly, since energy will be so cheap, we'll use more of it. So we'll be able to do more things, more business models will work, there'll be a lot of great development growth. It'll be wonderful, and it could transform the world.
Well,
and
sure.
So I'm not worried about the energy people going broke.
They'll never go broke, and then the American consumer who spends $2,000 to $5,000 a year on energy for their home now has that money to spend on something else, like a new car that doesn't run on gasoline, or a big screen TV, or clothes, or a bigger home, or you name it. I mean,
but let's reach out. With that cheap energy, we can build desalinization plants offshore wherever they're needed, provide proper fresh water, drop that 25,000 kids that are dying a day down to 25, and stop feeding the enormous dissatisfaction of this out there, which is going to continue to feed the building of asymmetric terrorist groups. If we don't start taking care of the world's kids and the world's peoples and give people a fair chance, we're going to have a world with terrorism that makes the current present day look like a party.
Sure, because...
Right? And are the world's governments doing anything about that? Well, I know one thing they're not doing. They're not ending the truth embargo. They're not bringing that ET technology out. So apparently they're not all that concerned about having, say, 50 million suicide bombers lined up and ready to go in 15 years. So that's part of the bad governance. I mean, when you look at priorities of the world governance, particularly in the U.S., it's unbelievable. It's simply unbelievable. I could take several hundred randomly chosen kids from relatively good suburban high schools who are taking civics and geography and governance, take them to Washington, replace the entire Congress, and they would do a better job. That is how badly we are being governed and how bad the priorities are. It's not just, it's a systemic ingrained dysfunction that probably cannot really be changed unless you completely swap the whole group out and bring in new people. And I'm telling you, you know, relatively smart, well-meaning kids from high school could do a better job than these people, because they would come in and they would establish a proper set of priorities, and right away things would start getting better.
Well, look at the way the system works. I mean, as soon as a congressman is elected, and hopefully it's a bus driver or a school teacher or a cop or an engineer or a construction worker who gets elected, but it usually isn't. But as soon as they do get elected and make their way to Washington, their staff says, oh, my gosh, you've got to go back in campaign mode, because you're gonna have to run another election in 2 years.
Sure.
So you've got to raise another $2 million over 2 years. And let me tell you, I know this personally, $2 million is really, really hard to raise.
You have to campaign all the time. So immediately, the United States governance, particularly the congressional level, is automatically about 40%. That's just, you start there.
Sure.
Because 60% of their time has to go to stay in office and campaign. So it's like you only elect 40% of a person to begin with, all right? And then it degrades from there. I think generally from the members of Congress, and I think that the next election is going to cost about $1 billion total. Three. Counting all congressional seats, governorships, statewide elections, and the presidential tickets, it's going to cost about $3 billion. I think in Congress alone, I think by and large, we are getting about 3 to 5% of a person. In other words, whatever it takes to put them there, whether you have to raise $2 million, $1 million, whatever, some of the Senate races will be $6 million. When they finally get there and they're sitting in their chair in Washington, D.C., what you get from them in terms of their ability to govern this country and improve it, you're getting about 5% of that person.
Well, sure, because, you know, partly because of the economic machine you just mentioned, and partly because that economic machine, in order to survive it, you have to be a certain type of individual, which is usually not the type of individual that would be really good in governing in that position. Now, I know my good friend Van Hillary, who came from the little town of Madisonville or Morristown, Tennessee, he was a great congressman, but he said, I'm going to serve 3 terms and come home, and that's what he did. He served 6 years, and he was home, and he ran for governor, and he lost because he just didn't have the state clout to be able to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But he was great in Congress. That is a very rare story. Maybe we need a constitutional amendment that changes the term of Congress people to 4 years, so that they'll get out of campaign mode at least for 2 years, and be functional as a public servant.
I don't support that, but it's complicated why I don't do that. It's tricky, but your intention is good. Look, what has to happen is this. It's not really complicated. American people need to go to the polls, right? And there'll be a candidate there that spent $1.5 million, basically feeding with a bunch of propaganda nonsense.
Right.
And there'll be another candidate that spent about $50,000, but they've got really good ideas. They need to elect
order.
The candidate that spent the $50,000 and tell the 1.2 million person to go away. And then that $50,000 candidate goes to Washington and says, look, I'm just going to go and do my job, do the best I can. I'll let you be informed of what I'm going to do. And if you like my job, reelect me. And the constituents will say, great, good job, fine. You don't need to spend another $500,000. We're watching what you're doing. We're going to reelect you if you do a good job. When they start doing that, they can change things very, very fast.
Oh, now you're talking about an informed voter and not one that votes on hair or alphabetical order.
Well, they're informed one way or another. If they show up in that booth, they have to make a choice, so they know something, right? And increasingly, they know that there is a difference between hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars of propaganda ads and just some basic information. Look, in the age of the Internet, you can go and find out the position of every single candidate on every single issue if you want to. You can know everything about them. It takes about 10 minutes. Go find the candidate and do it. There's nothing preventing getting information. The candidate doesn't need to spend $1 million to give it to them. Just go to their website and read it, right? So the American people are need to adjust and go, wait a minute, the information is there. It's cheap. I don't have to watch the same ad 15 times in a row that's put together by some, campaign specialist, ad specialist. It's probably 80% misleading and useless anyway because there's no real material in it. I'll go to the actual website of the candidates and find out which one I like. They haven't made this adjustment yet. They're still in a transition. Well, fine, but they better get their act together. All right, because they're being sold a bill of goods, like you would believe. And one of the bill of goods they've been sold is there's no EDs here. No EDs. Nothing here, folks. Move along. And there are, right? Guaranteed. 100% certain. And the work of Paradigm Research Group and the work of the colleagues that I help to the best that I can, and there are many, Stephen Greer and Alfred Weber and Michael Sala and Paula Harris and Victor Vigiani and Mike Bird, and David Griffin in England, and new people coming online, we all have one goal. Everybody that I work with has one fundamental goal. They have many issues. Alfred Weber's involved in like a half a dozen issues, a lot of which are mainstream. But there's one key issue that's common amongst all of us. We cannot really move forward if we are going to continue to exist in a situ-state status where the governments of the first world, UK, Canada, United States, Australia, France, Britain, Spain, Greece, Italy, Russia, Ukraine, are telling the people that there is nothing here, there is no ET presence, when in fact there is. That is such an egregious dislocation of reality. It is such a fundamental misstatement of reality. It makes the Catholic Church's suppression of Galileo utterly trivial. Right? It's nothing.
Yeah, but we're not trying to get people to look through the lens to see if the Earth is revolving around the sun or the other way around.
No, just watch History Channel and watch a few documentaries. Case closed.
What we want to do is we want to throw open the underground warehouse doors, and we want to roll out those craft that have been recovered.
Yeah.
And, okay, let's not let all the technology out so every third world terrorist in the country can make a H3 bomb out of a few household chemicals.
Fair enough.
But let's go ahead and at least share with the people that, yes, these craft were here. We've been reverse engineering them. We pretty much have a monopoly on it. And if it's our government or it's all the first world governments or it's all the first and 1.5 world governments that are in on it, because it takes a tremendous amount of money to make this happen. I mean, this is a black hole of money. We're not talking about billions of dollars. We're talking about trillions of dollars being spent trying to crack the secret to trans-dimensional travel, to hyperluminal travel and communication. And the really shocking thing is they may have done it. In fact, there may be no doubt about it that they've done it.
They may have done it. I know this. They have those vehicles. I'm certain there have been crashes, and I'm certain they have those vehicles. I'm almost nearly certain they've been working engineering them for some time, and I think they've actually flown their own. I think they've made substantial progress. In terms of some of the more extreme things, like time travel, whatever, I have no idea. But I'm concerned with just two things. The fundamental propulsion, which allows us to move goods and services. It allows us to take all of the nuclear waste that's piling up all over the United States, put it in an anti-gravity barge, and just flip it into the sun. Gone, no problem. And also the energy, which transforms the world. Those two things are there. We got to have those.
Right.
And imagine this. The first world, England, which right now is, you know, it's Obama Day over there. England, Canada, United States, first world, comes from, look, we've had this. We're bringing it out now. We're going to be careful, but we're going to allow this tech to start being used to bring cheap energy and new solutions to the rest of the world so that we can alleviate your suffering. We're going to probably give it to you, and they should, right? At least at cost. Allow them to these energy systems to go into place around the world and stop these kids from dying. Bring some stability to the world. We're going to do this because we really do want a peaceful world. Imagine that happening, right? And imagine how the third world will respond to that when they say, look, these people are really going to now give us something we can work with, right? Not a few bucks that'll end up in the pocket of some despot, but energy which transforms our culture, that gives us food, water, that allows us arable land, allows us to bring in medicines, propulsion systems, allow us to do things. Need fresh water? Go get an iceberg. Float the thing off the coast. Bring the water straight in, and all kinds of other stuff. Now, that shows they really care. Maybe we will not go blow up their mall next week, right? Maybe we won't send 20,000 suicide bombers, right, to blow up every Starbucks in the United States next year. Maybe we ought to give them a chance. This is not Pollyanna. This is not make-believe. This is exactly what could happen tomorrow if we would end this truth embargo. The American people have already made it clear, 50% know there's ETs here, 90% know the government is lying. When are they going to step forward, go to Washington, D.C., and say, okay, where are they, what do you know, and if you don't tell me, I'm throwing you out of office. I'm calling for your impeachment. I'm calling for subpoenas and indictments. I want the truth, want it now. If I don't get it, you're out of here. When are they going to do that? What has to happen before they say, wait a minute? You know, what's bigger than there's extraterrestrials here? What other issue should I put before that?
Well, maybe
in terms of demanding from my government the truth.
Maybe we need a million child march on Washington.
We need a million experiencer march, and let me tell you, if I had the money to put it together, I'd love to take a shot at it. It would be quite an event. But most of them are still in the closet, bless their hearts, and I understand why. But there are plenty out of the closet, and one day, hopefully sooner than later, if the embargo doesn't end, and it could end again at any time, there's all kinds of things happening. I mean, we could go into that. 100 or 200,000 experiencers will be on the mall down there and saying, hey, I got ETs in my closet, folks. I don't know about SETI, and you're looking for radio signals in the sky. I don't know what Jill Tarter's doing. I got ETs in my closet. What are you going to do about it? That'll be an interesting day.
Yeah, well, that's what we're looking for. And you know, maybe we're not looking for the skeletons, or we're not looking for old pieces of metal that are 60 years old. Maybe we need an event that, well, we affectionately call here at X Squared Radio Global First Contact, where the veil is parted, shall we say, and they just come through in these one-mile diameter craft, a la Independence Day, only without all the fireworks, and they say, here we are, and we're ready to introduce ourselves to you. You have finally exhibited enough curiosity and enough truth-seeking integrity that you're ready planet to accept this. That beep usually means we have a caller on the line. Caller, your first name and where you're calling from, please.
Hello?
Hello. We have a caller, your first name and where you're calling from?
Oh, Robin from Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Brooke.
Hi.
Hi. I love your guest. He's awesome. I got a couple things to bring up, and I know where he's going with this, and I love it. I mean, he's right on, and there's such energy for this. But my problem is when you get the governor of Arizona coming back, you know, 6 years or 8 years later saying, look, I lied. There actually was a UFO going over, Phoenix. those lights really were, you know, an unidentified flying object. I was out there. I saw it. I saw it go overhead. And he had Fox News interviewing him, and he had CNN interviewing him. And after he had that interview, nobody did anything. Nothing got going. It dropped. Instead of the media moving, like what the audience, the viewers, listening and saying, hey, we want to hear more, calling the stations and saying, where are you going with this? Why aren't we hearing more about it? What else is going on? You know, there's other reports of UFOs. If this one actually happened, what about the other ones? How valid are they? And like you said, the energy that takes to move these things is huge. And it would save, are you kidding? It would create Gardens of Eden everywhere if we could, just like you said, set up desalinization plants everywhere. You could feed the world. No, who wants to fight when your bellies are full?
Yeah, as long as.
But when you can't get a government, okay, when you had people, they had it on. It was on national news. This governor said, I lied, and nothing moved forward with it.
Let me respond. She's absolutely right, but let me. I'm going to give you a quick survey of what has happened in the last couple of years, and you can see why, when an individual situation like Symington may not have the traction you'd like. The cumulative effect, though, is taking us where we want to go. Let me just give you a quick survey.
All right.
Last few years, former chief of staff of the Clinton administration, John Podesta, who was a chief advisor to Clinton during the first 3 years of the Clinton administration, 92 to 93, while 93 to 96, rather, while Lawrence Rockefeller was trying to convince Clinton to be the disclosure president. He comes out in 2002 and 2003, and at a press conference at the National Press Club, basically says, yeah, we need to get this information out. We need to get the information to the people and about the UFO reality, and the people have a right to know, et cetera, et cetera. This is a chief of staff, former chief of staff. By the way, almost everything I'm about to say is all on my website in the quote section at paradigmresearchgroup.org, or it'll be in the news archive, or it'll be elsewhere, right? John Podesta, in other words, came out of the closet on the issue in 2002 and 2003, and he is now still a major player in the Democratic National, in the Democratic Party, and of course he is the founder of the center left think tank, the Center for American Progress.
Yeah,
Bill Richardson comes forward in his introduction to the Roswell Dig Diaries and says the Roswell thing hasn't been solved yet. The government says it has. The governor of New Mexico, Bill Richardson, said it hasn't, and he puts it in print right there. Now he also happens to be running for president. And doing reasonably well, though everybody knows he's running for vice president. Bill Richardson, who is outed on this issue as well, may be the vice president of the United States in about a year. Fife Symington, the governor, 10 years ago, comes forward and says, yeah, I actually saw the big craft fly over earlier that day. I'm sorry I lied about it. Here's the truth. Interesting. Paul Hellyer, former Minister of Defense of Canada, comes forward and says, yeah, they're as real as the planes over your head. The Minister of Defense okays a press conference in Mexico City where they release an interesting event to the researchers down there and indicate they're willing to cooperate with UFO research, with UFO researchers' government cooperation. Amazing. Then the Minister of Defense in Brazil authorizes the Brazilian Air Force to cooperate with the UFO researchers down there. Then the French government starts dumping 1,600 of their classified sighting reports from their National Space Agency, the CNES, out onto the Internet. The U.K. dumps 4,000 cases out on the Internet. All this happened the last year. Right?
Right, and guess what? And it's not on major. It's not on the mainstream media.
Well, it's not on there every day,
like,
but it's still there. And it's on my website, and those articles are all archived. And let me give you that. I'm having a...
But, you know, honey, if you have a conversation once or twice or three times a year on a UFO on a news station, do you think that that's going to... I mean, they're going to have to beat the drum on this. Richardson can't come out and say something 1 year or 1 month, you know, or once every 8 months, and then something's going to happen with it.
Yeah, let's at least...
You know, I mean, these guys have to be beating it just like they do... Well, yeah, the way they push their economic policies and everything else. They every day they hype. They've got to bring it up like that, and they They do, what they do is they give you a little bit of taste. They kind of say, well, give them a cracker. We'll say something. You know, the media will do a little thing on it, and it'll go away, and I don't have to deal with them anymore.
Well, what you're missing here is that there is a reason why. What's going on with the UK, with France, with Canada, Mexico, Brazil, John Podesta, Richardson, Fife Symington, and others, is not quote, an avalanche of information. It is positioning. These are not just anybody. It's not just anybody. When I say John Podesta is out on this issue, that's very significant. He's not just anybody. He is a major player in the coming new Democratic administration.
Why didn't
and
I know
Richardson
this?
Is the potential vice president. So what's happening here is not that they're, quote, coming out with a torrent of information that you would like to have right now, and I understand why. They are positioning themselves. So you need to pay attention here. These are basically tip-offs that something else is coming soon. The disclosure event will be triggered from within the government, unless it's triggered by the ET. Look, if the ETs park a two-mile-wide craft over the Capitol, we're going to have disclosure very quickly,
yeah,
but we're also going
to
have a lot of upset
right
people.
Right? Well, wait a minute. You're saying, so you have inside information saying, you know, these guys are actually actively working at something that in a they have a date within, you know, six months. Are you just saying, because I've been hearing people say, for the last 6 years, well, since 2002, that there was going to, any day now, we're going to get information out. Well, 2002, and 3, and 4, and 5, and 6 has gone by, and now it's 2007, and if I hear one more person say, any day now, because I think it's a cracker.
Well, you know, people are saying the same thing about the Soviet Union. It was going to collapse, it was going to collapse, it was going to collapse. People say, no, it's going to last forever. They got a lock. They got total control. They got the military. They got the Secret Service, KGB. It'll last forever. They say, no, it's crumbling, and then it crumbled, gone. Same thing here. Look, the embargo is almost over. It will end. I can't say exactly when, but it'll be sooner than later. And it's extremely important. It's not. You've got to pay attention to the signs, right?
Okay, give me
when
the signs.
When a man who is running for president, who is considered the front runner to be the vice president of the United States, writes in a book for all time that the number one event in this issue in the United States hasn't been solved yet, when the government's position is that it has. It was, remember, a Mogul balloon, and says that it needs to be investigated and the people should know what really happened, and he could become the vice president. And he doesn't get attacked by this, by the people competing for the presidency within his own party, or the people in the other party who would easily, you know, chop him up and serve him for dinner if they thought they could get away with it. He's not
That's
attacked,
good point.
He's not criticized, he's not ridiculed. You have to understand, this is a tip-off that something is happening, and what I believe is happening, and I believe that this is what Podesta was moving on, because I think the Democrats were very confident that they were going to win the election in 2004. They did not believe that George Bush could win that second term. They got surprised. So Podesta came out in 2002, 2003, anticipating that the Democratic win in 2004. It didn't happen. Podesta then stepped back and has not said much since then. Richardson then came out last year in the Roswell Digg Diaries. I think the Democrats are planning to be the disclosure administration. I think they plan to do it early in the 2009 period, the beginning of the next term.
Well, I hope it comes out as a debate question in the primaries. I think that would be awesome.
I hope you're right.
Well, I'll tell you, Chris Matthews, I've approached him many times. I've sent him stuff. If he were to ask that question, I'd fall off the chair.
We're going to cover this more in our next hour with Steve Bassett. Hang around, Robin. We're going to be back with more of X Squared Radio right after this.
Times, Egypt has expressed an irresistible spiritual magnetism on the hearts of millions of people. Experience 14 magic days in Egypt, exploring Cairo, the pyramids of Giza, and the temple of Dendera and Abydos with Maureen St. Germain. You cannot see it on your own as well as you can with this group. Click on the 14 Magic Days banner at X Squared Radio and join us in Egypt from October 6th through the 20th. Shalimar Productions was created from a vision to bring to Mount Shasta the masters who are out there on the front lines helping to awaken a sleeping humanity. From July 12th through August 12th, you can watch this dream unfold through three great conferences, including workshops. Mikhail Ledwin, William Henry, Sherry Thuria, David Carmos, as well as David Icke and others will offer you their wisdom and experience. This is just a sample of the life-changing knowledge you can gain by clicking on the Shalimar Productions banner at X Squared Radio. The foundations of religion and science were used to restore knowledge lost for over 6,000 years in our first book. The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 2, called 2012 and the Harvest of the End Times, brings us vital knowledge for the race of mankind. Have the Watchers returned? What did the Aztecs mean by their ancient predictions for the year 2012? Why is Earth changing so rapidly now before our very eyes? Who were the Shining Ones who lived on the Earth and worked with mankind as they recovered from cataclysm? Who are we? Where did we come from? If you could find a book that answers just one of these questions, you'd buy it. Now there are two in this series that is sweeping the world with its message. Go to arcofmillionsofyears.com and get your autographed copy today. Now also available in full audio version. Think it's possible you've existed for thousands of years? The new book in the Universal Learning Series by Sandy Andrew, called Your Never-Ending Life, will shine light on memories you once dismissed as impossible. When you're finished with this book, you will realize why and how you can relish all the beauty and sadness in all your lives. Search your higher mind, find your soulmate, and know that you are never alone in this world. You can find the book easily by clicking the Universal Learning Series banner at X Squared Radio. Own an inkjet printer, right? I used to purchase my replacement inkjet cartridges at a national superstore that will remain unnamed. A few months ago, I replaced the color and black cartridges, and the cost was nearly $80. Well, no more. Now, I purchase all my inkjet cartridge and copier supplies from 123 Inkjet. Now, I pay less than $15 per cartridge. And I got free shipping. Plus, every time I buy, I have a chance at winning a brand new printer. How cool is that? All you have to do is click on the 123 Inkjet banner at X Squared Radio, and you get exactly the same savings. Excellent printer supplies at super savings at 123 Inkjet at X Squared Radio. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us.
If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio.
And welcome back to X Squared Radio with Brooks Agnew, Stephen Bassett, and our special guest, Robin from North Carolina. Just want to let you know that this actually has become the fastest growing talk radio program in North America by no small margin either. Those numbers are independent. They come from some rating agencies out there that rate the growth of internet radio and compare it to broadcast radio. Broadcast radio grows, it kind of ebbs and flows about 3 to 5% a year, but we've been growing 50% per quarter for 2 years, and that growth rate is still going. So hang on, because we've got the best guests, the best authorities, and we talk about the best subjects, and we go places where no one else goes, and we're unafraid. So we're going to keep going. And we picked up a few new sponsors, and I wanted to let you know about those. I did tell you earlier about, in one of the commercials about NitroPack, the reason I want to bring them up is they've been around for 19 years. We searched far and wide to find a company that packages emergency preparedness supplies for the general public. And they do everything from 72-hour packs to 2-year supplies of food. And we believe that it's possible in your area, whether it's tornadoes or floods or earthquakes or other acts, that you might be well served by having enough food for you and your family for a short period of time, just in case. Never hurts to have it. Those are the people to go to at NitroPack. Make sure to click on that banner at X Squared Radio. And recently, I had to purchase some business cards because I went through all the ones that I've had for X Squared Radio, and also some bookmarks because we run through those in large quantities. And we ran across a company called OvernightPrints.com. Now, OvernightPrints.com has unbelievable service. Literally, if you order your business cards by 5 p.m. Pacific time, that's 8 p.m. Eastern time, you could have your business cards delivered to your door early a.m. the following morning. That's next day service for full color business cards with a UV covering on the outside. So, and that's both sides, full color, delivered overnight. And that's OvernightPrints.com. And they don't just do business cards. They also do brochures. They do letterhead. They do envelopes. And they even do the postcards, 4x6, and the oversized 5.5x8. You really, really be satisfied with their service. Go to OvernightPrints.com and check them out. You'll be hearing some commercials on our radio program in the near future for that company. Just an outstanding new sponsor. So our guest is Stephen Bassett. Really, he needs no introduction, especially for those people that listen to this program. But we do have a lot of people that listen to the archive. Mondays is one of our biggest listening days, as our listener profile is that person that has a PC at work, and they go to work and they log on to X Squared Radio, immediately go to the archives and start the programs, which are saved in 1-hour blocks, so they can listen all day long, 1 hour at a time, and they get virtually uninterrupted action from guests like Stephen Bassett. His website is paradigmresearchgroup.org. That's P-A-R-A-D-I-G-M, researchgroup.org. There's over 1,300 articles there, enough to read for several weeks if you want to bone up on this subject. But he claims, and I support that claim, that very soon maybe within this presidential campaign or shortly thereafter, we're going to see a major disclosure event. So let's pick up where we left off. And I still got my guest in North Carolina, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. So my question was, do you think that a question about disclosure will end up in the presidential debate? Wouldn't you like to see that?
At this point, not likely. Where these questions could get asked would be, they have everything really tightly controlled now. They say they take questions from the audience, but really they screen them. And the internet, they screen. They're all screened, right? Sometimes in the town hall situations, where there's a little bit more open, a possible question could be gotten through. One of the real problems we face now is none of these candidates ever really get what we'll call the impromptu question anymore. It's all screened in advance, and they're screening stuff out constantly, right? There's so many questions. Have you ever heard them ask about population control? Like, when are we going to deal with that?
Oh, I've heard them talk about overpopulation, but I
but
never...
That, oh, rarely. Oh, Brooks, yeah. That's very, very rare. Oh, very, very rare. It almost never comes up. The nuclear proliferation, right? Have they been asked about the Echelon program? Or have they been asked about the nuclear bunker buster program? How about the antimatter research program? They don't get asked anything about the stuff that could really cause us problems. They're asked crap is what they're asked, and these questions are all screened. So it used to be you might be able to get through, particularly in some of the on camera in the receiving lines and sometimes in the town halls, but they've now tightened it up more and more. So you got to sit here and watch Chris Matthews ask them to raise their hand, you know, y'all raise your hand if you think California should be, you know, split into two states or whatever. And it's embarrassing. I mean, it really is embarrassing. I feel bad for myself. I feel bad for them. I feel bad for my country. And it's really a three-ring circus, and it's nonsense. The tough questions never asked. So I'm not – where you can ask these questions, though, is in the congressional races. Now, I have a section up on my site called Get Out the Questions. It's one of the many, many projects that is the ParadigmResearchGroup.org. And if you go to Get Out the Questions, it lists some various questions that you could ask – and even the follow-ups you could ask of candidates if you can ever get one into them. And your best shot is in congressional races. Because in those situations, it's frequent that the person running will be in some sort of a meeting or question response when they're going out amongst the people in their district when they could be asked these questions. And it's important that they be asked it on camera, right? And so that's the best shot, and people need to start doing that. And I talk to people about this, and most of them are still reluctant. They believe if they stand up and ask a question about the ET issue of a candidate, that like one of those commercials on TV where the beer can falls out of the sky and lands on the guy, you know, for not being manly enough, that this some sort of a can will just drop on them and they'll be squashed, or people will laugh at them or whatever. They're still buying into this truth embargo. They're buying into the ghettoization of the issue, and unfortunately, that allows it to go on.
Wait a minute, I got a question. Well,
yeah.
Can I ask something here?
Well, I was going to wait. Hold on. What I was going to say is, what if the public really asks a good question? I was going to ask Robin if she had a question for her congressman. If he were on the line right now, what would she ask him about ETs?
Okay, this is what I'd say. I'd say, look, we all know that there are UFOs out there, and my question isn't about ETs or aliens landing or somebody taking over the world and or using us for food or farming us. My question is, I know that these UFOs have propulsion systems. I know that they've been shot down. I know that we've back-engineered it. So I know that we have this information, and we can provide free energy or over-unity energy based on that back-engineering and from those propulsion systems from those UFOs. Why are we not pursuing this? Why aren't we bringing this forward when people are screaming at the pumps right now? $500 a month to pay for gas that they normally put out $75 a month is ridiculous. That's taking food out of the baby's mouths of the American population. We're not, the middle class is not that rich. You got two working parents now, and money is tight.
And we're not going to take it anymore.
Yeah, and we want some answers, and it has to come from you.
Let me make a suggestion for your listeners. If, when you ask a question, always ask a question in a way that gives the people that are listening or the press an immediate place to go.
Yeah.
All right, now here's what I mean.
How do we do that?
You say, Mr. Candidate, are you aware that several astronauts, including Gordon Cooper and Edgar Mitchell, have publicly stated that there clearly is something to the UFO issue, including a cover-up, right? And these astronauts are considered American heroes. Gordon Edgar Mitchell has a Ph.D. in astrophysics from MIT, and he walked on the moon. Are you aware that several ministers of defense, including Admiral Lord Hill Norton and Paul Hillier, have stated that there's something to this? Why aren't we hearing it from you? Now, that immediately gives people the tip. Let's Google Edgar Mitchell. Let's Google Gordon Cooper, UFO. Let's Google Paul Hillier. And they can go online in just a few seconds. The pages are all there. So you always ask a question such a way that people can quickly go check and say, and find something that hits them right in a kisser. All right? Philip Corso, you can talk about that. Corso made accusations about the technology was transferred and that he knew about the Roswell records, something like that. You can throw these kinds of things out there and give them a hook. Now, they will blow you off 90% of the time. They will laugh it off. Though when I ran for Congress, I must admit that because I was on the ballot in the congressional race in 2002, there were questions about the ET issue because that was my issue. And they were in the debates that I was in, and they were asked. And both of the candidates, the Republican Chris Van Hollen, who's gone on to become a player in the Democratic Party, he's just got a recent, you know, major position given to him, and the incumbent who lost, Connie Morella, they both answered those questions, and they answered them carefully. They didn't giggle, they didn't laugh, and they didn't blow it off, but they answered them very carefully. They knew enough about me, and they knew enough of how real this was, that they didn't want to risk laughing those questions off, because they deeply suspected they were probably true. But they couldn't really answer directly, because that would draw them into it. And so we make little progress, you know, little steps, little progress here, little progress there, and we'll make more. Look, in September this year, I'm gonna have a third X conference. X conference 2007, the Insiders. That's going to be at the Hilton Hotel, September 14 through 16. It's already launched. I got 15 speakers lined up. 5 more got invites out to. It's going to be. It's on the website at xconference.com with a hyphen, x-conference.com. It's a big deal. We're holding it in Washington area. All the candidates are being invited, all their staff, they want to send a representative, all the members of Congress are invited to send a representative. I actually have an invite out to Fife Symington, and I don't know if he got it yet. And so if anybody knows Fife Symington, let him know that Steve Bass is trying to reach him because he'd like him to come to the X conference and talk about what he was talking about the Phoenix Lights event. We've got people coming in from England, Italy, Canada, France, and we're going to have some witnesses there.
Like an awesome event.
We're going to have Roswell witnesses there. We've got the new book, Roswell Witness to Roswell by Don Smith and Tom Carey. They're going to both be there. This event is not just to have a conference. It's to literally bring the issue right into the nose of the Washington political media and the Washington politicians. And
you have the press invited too, right?
Oh, well, we had 80 press passes out in 2004. So I'm hoping a lot of people come, because if people come, if we get a good turnout, 400, 500, 600, it sends a very powerful message to Washington. This is real. And it also generates a lot of energy, and there will be coverage there. And then we're going to hold a press conference the Monday following the conference at the National Press Club, and we're going to have some announcements and announce books and stuff. So I'm doing what I can do to get this issue under Washington's nose. I need all the help we can get. I need support. I need people to come to this event. The Hilton Hotel, which is like a 3-star hotel, $259 a night, $89 rooms. Not just for the conference, but which is the 14th through the 16th, but from the 10th through the 19th. So if you want to come for a 10-day holiday, you get $89 rooms at the Hilton Hotel in Gaithersburg.
Well, let's see if we can get some help from our caller. Caller, can you give us your first name and where you're calling from?
Oh, this is BJ from Austin, Texas. How you doing, bro?
Hey, BJ, welcome.
I've been to Austin. They got great foosball tournaments there.
Yes. And Stephen, thank you for everything you're doing, man. I just wanted to say thank you. And I actually had a suggestion to what you guys were talking about as far as, like, maybe the grassroots, what we can do out here. And I was thinking about making some sort of black and white flyer, something that was easy, and I could hand it out to people at, like, the gas pump when I'm there. I mean, I don't know if that sounds like a bad idea or if, you know, the gas,
everything
gas
helps.
Would be bad. But, I mean, we could put, you know, Google terms and things on there. We could put your website. We could put Disclosure Project website on there, and, you know, it's easy, and we could be talking to people and getting the word out. But
I like your idea. I want you to get the word out. I don't think we want to cut down any more trees than necessary.
Right. Well, sure.
But the way you get the word out is this. Look, the number one tool that is going, if I had to pick the one tool that will do the most and has done the most and will do the most to not only end the ET truth embargo, but probably bring about political reform in America, significant change in government policies, citizen participation, everything else, it's the internet, without question.
Yeah.
And to the extent that the government is unable to bring the internet to heel, and for God's sakes, don't let them do it, it will effectuate these changes. And the key to it is email. Email, list, and address. In other words, what you don't want to do is a flyer. Take a page. If you like a page on a website or one of my websites, like Paradigm Research Group, send the link to a bunch of people. Tell them to send it to more. If you have an email list, occasionally just send them stuff and bump them out. You know, where you can do a, you know, not a huge mailing, but, you know, 100 a ton. If you have a big email list, then go to a place like StreamSend and create your own email thing, and you can bulk mail all you want for $15, $20 a month. But this stuff needs to be viral. All right, and if you've got videos, like at my site, I've got a video link library. It's over 180 links to pretty interesting videos related to the ET issue. They're all on YouTube and Google, but I've put them all together in a single place. You can go jump to them. Spread those around. Viral it around, right? Conferences, viral. Let people know about it. Viral that. It's the net. It's not paper, by and large, anymore. It's the internet. Think internet, internet, internet. Think email. Think YouTube. Think viral. This is the fastest way to get this stuff around, and it's easy, it's cheap, and it's where it's at. That's where you want to go. If you're not on the internet, get there. Right?
That's where X-Squared Radio is.
and internet radio is another factor of that without question, no question. And internet radio is archived, right?
Yes,
that, that's new. So the stuff never goes away. This is another reason why the embargo has to end. The internet is building up this massive archive of truth about this issue while the government continues to sit there and say, oh no, the earth is flat. And the sun goes around the earth, you see. And the earth
heavier
is flat.
Than the flight is not possible.
And we laugh. We laugh at them. And let me tell you something. These guys in Washington, you know, they would rather break both legs than to be laughed at. There's guys in this town that would go tomorrow to Iraq, dodge bullets, right, to do their job. But if they thought that Jay Leno would say a joke about them, they'd commit suicide. I mean, embarrassment is the most feared thing in Washington D.C., which is why when a government ghettoizes an issue and makes light of it, it's easy to control it. Right? These people are not cowards per se; they're not physical cowards, but they hate to be embarrassed, and so. You got to just keep getting the information out, because as the truth comes up underneath them, they look stupider and stupider and stupider, and they hate that. And I think ultimately they'll tell the truth, because why would I want to look like a fool when I can tell the truth about this issue and be a hero?
Well, I can tell you the state that steps forward and says, we've got grant money to build a factory, because we've got empty factories in every single state in this nation. We have shipped so much manufacturing overseas, it's obscene.
Mm.
Take a couple of million square feet of empty factory space, take a couple of thousand out-of-work factory workers, and give them the task of building some of this technology in a consumer form, whether it's a generator, a water filter, a water heater, a solar cell, whatever it is. And let's get it out on the consumer level and start empowering people to change their energy paradigm in this country.
Let me go further. And there's another inside bit of information your viewers probably don't know about. There is a project called the Apollo Project. All right, the new Apollo Project, also called Apollo Alliance. It was brought out back before the 2004 election because, once again, the progressives in this country thought for sure they're going to win that one, right? No problem. We'll win 2004. And essentially, this project will immediately emerge in the next administration if the Democrats win. You know, I'm not trying to be partisan here. I'm just trying to tell you right now they're way ahead in the polls. Okay, so they may win. And essentially, the concept behind it is a massive FDR-like government-funded environmental high-tech bonanza where the government funds enormous research into new technological solutions to the environment, and they're built here, they're invented here, and we hire people like crazy to, quote, implement this stuff. And they use the Apollo, which is kind of cool, because I tie it back to the Apollo program, which is the space program, where, you know, Kennedy said, I think we should go to the moon, and we were there in, what, 8 years. That was back when America worked, okay? 8 years to get to the moon? No problem. Now, right, you want to build some flush toilets, you know, down by the mall. It takes about 9-10 years just to get the funding. Can't get anything done. Back then, we got things done. Now, I have a suspicion that behind that Apollo program, the new Apollo project, the Apollo Alliance, is another program that would be many times more profound than that concept, which is a pretty good concept. Because, see, the jobs can't be sent away because the stuff's being invented here. Right? New tech, new jobs, new concepts, got to be all in the United States.
That's right.
And then it generates this trade-off. Behind that is the ET tech. You bring that out, and you've got the Apollo project, new Apollo project, cubed. So now, with that technology available to now be infused into the creation of whole new genres of business and tech, we could hire, the government could pay for it all and hire people. We could hire every engineer, every person out of work, not to mention the fact that the ET disclosure event will trigger a mass stampede to math and science in the United States.
Yeah,
every mother
the,
and father is going to have their kids signing up for math class.
But the government doesn't have to pay for it all. I mean, we've been working with a group for over a year to start up a factory in eastern Kentucky, which would do nothing except build existing high technology that can't seem to find funding to get past the prototypes.
Well, that will happen too, Brooks. But look, we need massive change. We need massive repositioning.
Yeah, but the consumer will pay for this kind of technology. I mean, it will make a profit once it hits the market. There is a huge demand
for
it.
No. But remember, the tech just doesn't immediately hit the market. What has to happen is the tech has got to be converted into business models.
Oh, sure.
And the world is in such a position right now that we need not only the free enterprise arena doing this, which it will do, but free enterprise arena, it's all about profit. And there are places this tech needs to go and things this tech needs to do. And the profit motive can't be the only basis. That's why the government's got to step in and drive this tech development, the new paradigm, the post-disclosure technological revolution has got to have a huge government component, open, transparent, driving the research so that it gets done as quickly as possible and it gets out into the third world. We don't want to have a situation where we try to hold it here, telling the third world, as soon as we get it all nice and cozy and done, we're going to sell it to you later, right? You guys have got a lot of money. That'll just make them even madder. This is an opportunity. This tech is so transforming, right? Remember, this is technology that allows extraterrestrial craft to travel at 20, 30, 40,000 miles an hour without creating sonic booms because it's actually displacing space, do non-inertial right turns, hover, right, not move at all, to move mile-wide triangles, literally, at a few miles an hour and then take off at thousands of miles an hour, right? This is that kind of technology. We will be in a position to really give to the second and third world something truly profound so they might try to develop a new appreciation for our good intentions. And we can't have the luxury of leaving that decision strictly to the free enterprise system.
Right. Now that's not to say that we want to give the ability for third world countries to fly craft through our airspace.
I'm talking about giving them the derivative technology that can be used for new business models, desalinization plants, disposal plants that would work because the energy would be so cheap it could burn anything up. The list goes on and on. I mean, we're talking about an ability to move stuff around. And look, if you have electrogravitic technology that allows you to move large quantities of goods and services around, you don't have to ship them across the ocean in these giant container ships. Do you know we lose 10,000 containers a year that fall off the container ships?
Get out of here.
I'm not. Look it up. 10,000. You ever seen those ships where they got them stacked up like 8, 9, 10 above the railing?
Yeah. Cause
guess what happens when they get into rough weather? The damn things fall off. You can go out in the middle of the Pacific and you can find some dead areas and you'll find little rubber duckies just floating around by the thousands and other toys on the surface. Lord knows what's down below because that's our mode of transportation.
You find left-handed Nike shoes.
You got it. But with anti-gravitic systems, we could move this stuff without having it fall into the ocean much cheaper, large quantities, quicker, right? Yeah. So that food gets there fresh and doesn't poison you.
Five weeks across the ocean?
Yeah, right. Sometimes two. And so the propulsion system, the energy systems transforms the world at a time when the world needs to be transformed. And so why isn't it there? Well, because there's a 60-year truth embargo, and enough people are still uncomfortable with ending it and being slightly embarrassed.
BJ, are you still there?
Yeah.
What do we do to end this 60-year truth embargo once and for all?
What? Say that again? Say the first part?
What do we do to end this 60-year truth embargo once and for all?
Man, I just think it's going to have to come from the grassroots, and everybody's going to have to be informed. Information is key, and the internet, like you said, Steve, and just any way we can get the word out, to be honest. And so it'll put that pressure exactly on these candidates. And in fact, actually, I was just looking at this U.S. Peace Government website, and I was curious if you guys talked to them at all, Steve. Do you guys interact with those guys?
Which group? Repeat, please.
U.S. Peace Government, run by Dr. John, I guess, Hagelin.
Oh, Hagelin. Yeah, Hagelin is. He's former candidate, and also I think he's involved in Maharish. Look, there are many, many groups out there, and that are working for progress and new ideas.
I was just curious. Sorry to change the subject a little bit. I
try to interact with some, but overall, I'm still in the ghetto. Remember, the ET issue is ghettoized. It's an intellectual ghetto created by the government, and most of the progressive movements out there are afraid to sit down at the same table with myself and other colleagues that are involved in this field because they have accepted that ghettoization. I have many invitations that have gone out for the X conference for mainstream people to come in and be part of panels and things, and they all refuse. Always.
Wow.
It's really a shame. Now, that doesn't mean there won't be some breakthroughs, and I got a couple possibilities for the X conference in September. But even though we may have common interests, like secrecy reform and so forth, they're afraid to be seen with us. This is the evil of ghettoization as a government policy, whether you're ghettoizing people or whether you're ghettoizing ideas. The government should never do that. Hopefully, this will be the last time it ever happens in America. But it's a tradition that governments have been following for thousands of years. You ghettoize segments of the society or ideas, isolate them, ridicule them, put them off to the side, and de-minimize them. And thus you don't have to deal with them. There's always a reason for doing it. It's always usually bad. They've done that here in the UFO question. Right? I wrote an article called UFO RIP. It's been published in Fade. I think it's been published in UFO Magazine, American Chronicle. It's up on my website. And it gets into the fact that the UFO era is over, and it talks about the intellectual ghettoization of the UFO issue by the government. This is the intellectual position the academics need to understand. And then maybe they would wake up and realize why we're not talking about this at Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Caltech, MIT. Why they can't, there's not a single university in the country right now, not a single one, teaching a single course on extraterrestrial-related phenomena, even though it's ubiquitous worldwide, and now in its 60th year, there is Temple does occasionally teach one because Jacobs is there. And so I can't say it's there is that one or two. Occasionally, it'll turn up a couple of continuing ed courses at some community college. Rebecca Hardcastle did that for a while in Phoenix, bless her heart, gave it a shot. But of the universities of the country, the fundamental universities, the basic colleges, not a single course. It is beyond, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm in my Lou Dobbs mode.
It's beyond the pale.
It's beyond the pale. It's an intellectual embarrassment so extraordinary that every single academic in this country, frankly, should go out in the public square with those lashes like they do in the Middle East, and they should just whip themselves until they bleed in repentance. That's how grotesque it is. It's 1,000 times worse than the repression of the Catholic Church at the Copernican Revolution.
It is.
That was like, we weren't ready yet. It's like, whatever. Yeah, it's a little problem. They had a lot of control. There was a certain limited intellectual dimension there. These people have no excuse at all. This is a modern intellectual catastrophe that tens of thousands of America's most highly educated academics have accepted the government's propaganda verbatim and gone in the tank on the most important issue in human history. And they're going to have to live with that from the moment disclosure takes place until the day they die. And I can assure you there's not going to be no escape, because it's going to be everywhere all the time, and they're going to be sitting there having to explain to a lot of people how they blew it, missed it, botched it, tanked it. And I don't want to be them. I don't want to be Jill Tarter or Chef Sostak having to explain their gobbledygook and positions and nonsense, propaganda, debunkery for the rest of their life. I feel sorry for them.
Well, Steve, can I ask you something about that, actually?
And yes.
About, it's kind of hard for me to put it, but on offering them forgiveness on this in a certain sense.
Yeah,
so they're not
amnesty.
So afraid of these subjects, because it seems like we're kind of going in us versus them mentality in this situation. And so they're so scared of, looking like liars maybe, or looking, or I don't know, even being threatened by these, these entities in the secret government. But it's just something I always think of, and I always want to say something. I just don't know who to talk to about that kind of thing, and I would think you'd be a person.
It's out there. Look, they're actually a very important issue here. There's actually several issues here. I'm talking about the larger mass of people that ultimately, they have no what we'll call legal or formal accountability. They just need to be embarrassed for themselves. And they've had ample opportunity to do it. What can I say? Now, there's two other areas that are very important. One is witnesses and amnesty. I fully support amnesty for witnesses. In other words, I don't know what I can do about it, but I mean, if the government were to come to me and say, what do you think about this idea? We'll give amnesty to anybody within the military intelligence complex who will come forward speaking exclusively to ET issues, even if it violates their security clearances. I'll say, absolutely. All right, do that. Of course, the government won't do that, because if they did, people will come forward that would end the truth embargo. But clearly, it's an issue, and if we could put it in play in Congress, we would. And I will bring it up to any congressman I talk to. It's like, this is one way to open up the floodgates if you care, but they'd still have to pass it. They'd have to be a law passed in Congress.
Right.
Now, here's the second one, reconciliation. I fully support truth and reconciliation as probably a post-disclosure. I don't think it's going to happen pre-disclosure, but a post-disclosure methodology, which is to say that if the government announces on Monday that there is ETs here, shortly thereafter, I think we need to quickly establish we won't call it that, because it connects it too much to South Africa, and the crimes in South Africa are of a different type. But we want to call it a kind of truth and, what's the word I'm looking for, a redemptification policy, where people would be told, look, we need to get information out. We need to find out who knows where and what's going on. So if you will come forward and talk with government authorities and whatever, you are not going to be, right? We're not going to indict you. You're not going to be criminalized. If you were involved in a cover up, if you were involved in a disinformation campaign, it's all cleared under national security. You are acting on the government's behalf, national security. We're not going to be filing lawsuits. We're not going to be taking everybody to court. This is a waste of time. We have a new world to build. We can't be litigating the last century. It's ridiculous. And so this idea that we're going to go out and catch people and criminalize this issue is really pointless. It's possible that even some people were murdered. But if they were murdered within the context of the national security structure. It's a waste of time to try to bring them to trial. I know that it's not fair, but there are worse things that have happened. We need to be concerned about getting the information out. So I support Truth and Reconciliation. I support amnesty for witnesses. And now I have a certain amount of sympathy for the rest who sat and did nothing, right? But not a lot. And overall, they're never going to be held accountable. They're just going to be slightly embarrassed. And maybe, if they're smart, they'll apologize and say, look, I really made a mistake here. I'm going to jump in. I'm going to get involved now. You know, I'm a teacher. I'm going to get involved. And I'm going to also make sure, as a teacher, as a dean, as a member of a college community, college campus, that we'll never have a situation where American universities put blinders over their eyes, bags over their head, and pretend something is when it isn't, or isn't when it is, simply because the government tells them so, or because the government might take away some grant money. We need independent universities. We need independent press. And we'll have more truth and less BS in this country, and I guarantee it'll make it a better country.
Awesome. I totally agree with you, man. That's great that you guys are doing that.
Well, I support that, too, but it's actually going to be a little easier than what people think it is, because Congress, especially Congress, mm-hmm. is completely run by the life of the battery that runs the light in the camera. So
yeah.
if you turn the camera on and you say, okay, now, Mr. Congressman, this truth is now out, okay? It's now in the public. The lights are on.
Mm-hmm.
What say you? And he'll say, oh, well, you know, now that the information is out there, mm-hmm. and I'm not really the one that's, you know, that's
yes.
breached it, now I've got to take this position. You know, the people deserve to know the truth. And then they're going to line up right behind it, and they're going to make it sound like it was their idea all along. So we're not really going to have this great fear or this great, I'm getting out of here because it's the E.T. nuts again.
Exactly.
They're going to get behind it because they're going to be holding in their hands, in front of the camera, an energy device that can power a car that consumes nothing, and it puts out zero pollution.
We hope.
Or they're going to be looking at the plans for a desalination plant that can send a 36-inch main full of clean water into
right.
the bowels of Africa straight off the ocean.
And even to Tucson.
like Tucson needs it now.
And here's another point, Brooks. This is another thing I constantly hear. All the terrible things are going to happen because people are going to be angry and upset and everything. Nonsense. When disclosure takes place, the vast majority of everybody is only going to be concerned about one thing, right?
Yeah.
What can you tell us about the ETs? They're not going to care about cover-ups and embargoes. They're not going to care about who did this and who did that. They're going to care
right.
about none of that.
Right.
They're going to want to know, what can you tell us about the ETs? And that will be a worldwide focus. And to the extent that the governments bring information out in a reasonable and orderly fashion and don't play with the truth, that's what people are going to want. And this idea that there's going to be chaos and everybody running around and making accusations is nonsense. It's not going to happen.
Well,
there's going to be a truth
fear.
Explosion.
There's another fear with this, and I'm just going to call this the Louisiana syndrome or the Katrina syndrome. This is where life support is on its way, but the leadership doesn't want it to come into the city because that would prevent people from leaving the city. In other words, that we can't control the population if you feed food and water into these areas where we would normally have life attrition. Now you're going to have life proliferation, and the ecosystem simply can't handle it.
Well, now you've just opened up a can of worms there. And I can do an hour on that one. I can do an hour on that can standing on my head, but let me just put it this way. We have too many people in this world. And if we don't reduce the number, hopefully in a open, orderly, fair, and legal fashion.
Well, let's reduce the rate of birth, because death is going to be a
natural
process.
No, reduce the numbers. We have too many people right now. But if we don't do it, then either nature will do it for us, or some people high up will concoct some way to do it, and we won't like those two alternatives. But right now, the idea of doing it in a cooperative and orderly fashion, where it's fair and reasonable, and everyone kind of sacrifices a little bit, and we turn the acceleration, and then we start moving it back. That ain't even happened. We're not even in the ballpark of that.
No.
And my point is this: that is a major issue. But I believe pretty firmly that until you have the ability to properly take care of the people that are here now, and that the nations of the world can demonstrate to people that they're not going to accept 25,000 kids dying a day, and they're going to accept, you know, malaria epidemics, that they're going to use the tech and the resources we can to make this a place where everyone can have a place to live. Until they see that, they're not going to be willing to cooperate with the world's governments to start an orderly process of population reduction. In other words, it's just the opposite. If there will be people who will say, wow, now that we've got super cheap energy, now we can have 20 billion people,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And hope, because that's 20 more, yeah, that's 10 more billion people to sell cars and cigarettes to. But I think enough people will raise their hand and say, that's the dumbest idea I've ever heard in my life, okay? So why don't you just take that idea and go somewhere and don't come back? I think a lot of heads will come forward and say, cooler heads will say, wait a minute. Look, we now have an opportunity for everyone on this planet to have a good life and live a full life. So now that we have that opportunity, let's provide that for the people that are here, and then let's all get together and figure out how we can stop the population bomb, turn it around, so we can end up with maybe in 50 to 100 years, maybe 2 to 3 billion people living in total and complete abundance. We had that opportunity at the beginning of the 19th century. In 1900, we were facing a century of expanding technological development that would have brought abundance to this world.
No doubt about
it. And we would have had it at the end of that century, except the population went from 1.5 billion to 6 billion, and we blew the opportunity. Because while the tech was coming, nobody stood around and said, if we increase the population fourfold, it'll completely squander that.
Yeah,
because
there were people having 10 to 15 children, too.
Whatever. I mean, but that's how you got to 6 billion. Nobody was, there wasn't enough of a consensus, there wasn't enough world cooperation to think that through and say, let's take advantage. So we missed that opportunity. And so at the end of the 20th century, we still had suffering on a massively global scale. So now we're going to have another opportunity when the ET tech comes along. And that means we're going to have the tech to provide abundance for everyone, but not if we will squander that opportunity if we go ahead and say, okay, let's have 30 billion people. Let's have 50 billion people. And then once we have so many people we can't stand it, then we'll just spill out into the rest of the galaxy looking for places to live because the Earth is so uninhabitable. What makes anybody think that's a good idea?
How hard is it for families to accept the idea of two kids? How hard is that?
It's not that hard. You provide incentives, you provide knowledge and information, you make adoption, you pour money into adoption systems. I mean, you have the finest adoption systems in the world, so that every kid that needs foam can have one. So, you know, you can have one kid, adopt two. But you provide powerful incentives, but you provide them in an equitable way. You do it without coercion. You do it with cooperation from the people, and you say, look, we need to cut back for a few generations. We need to make a sacrifice on behalf of the whole planet so that future generations will not have to suffer. And that means you can't have 8 kids. Don't have 8 kids. Let's have one. Here's an incentive not to do that. And overall, we could significantly, but it requires cooperation and trust. And right now, we don't have cooperation and trust. You want to know why? We got terrible governance. And we got governance based on lies. Everybody's lying to everybody else. Institutional,
yeah.
Systemic lying.
Right.
So why can we possibly develop a trust level that would allow that? And then the solution to everything is go to war. War on drugs, war on poverty, war on terror. We're declaring war on every improper noun in the English language. So we're not getting anywhere here. The ET tech embargo, the ET tech and the truth embargo's end will open an opportunity for the human race to truly make a major change. And the more people that know about it in advance, which is why I'm spending 3 hours with you on the phone tonight, right? Not that I'd be out partying, because I can't do that. But and my colleagues are doing the same thing, is to get the message out so that when this moment comes, as many people as possible will be ready to step forward and say, okay, now here's what we need to do next.
This has already been thought out. You know, we've already fleshed it out. We've talked about it. We've argued about it. We've debated it. For 60 years, we've been waiting for this moment to come. And now, we're educated, we're motivated, we're in the prime of our health, and we're ready for this technology to come out. And we're not going to squander it. We're not going to hoard it to ourselves. We're going to use it to better the living of mm-hmm. the entire planet and save the human race. And if it means that we can explore the galaxy further and deeper than the light barrier, just like the sound barrier limited us for a long time on this
sure.
planet, we're going to pass the light barrier just like everything else. And we're going to be able to skip around the galaxy and learn even greater things. And
every teenager in the world today has a possibility of going to the stars.
Yes, absolutely.
So why would they want to go blow themselves up for an ideology, or any ideology, that's rooted 20 centuries ago or 10 centuries ago? And I'm not picking on anybody here. I'm just saying that, like, increasingly, we have a situation where kids are being told, things are so awful, go kill yourself, when they could be going to the stars in a few years. But they don't know that because the government doesn't acknowledge that, well, we could go to the stars, right? Because there are no ETs, right? These kinds of lies at this level, when lies are this big, the big lie, the consequences of these kinds of lies are so... They resonate and they reverberate out like the ripples of a water, and the effects are almost incalculable. You can't even measure them. Look, you lie to your wife about something you didn't do, and you might get into trouble or whatever. The consequences, not so bad. But if you lie about something big enough, you lose your marriage, you lose your kids, you lose your family. Well, when governments lie at this level, the effects are virtually incalculable. And so, and since we can't calculate them, let's don't lie like that, because then we don't have to worry. Right, you don't have to worry about the results of doing something bad if you don't do something bad, and that's where we're at now.
I guess everybody asks the question. All right, in 1947, two craft crash, one in Roswell, one in San Augustine, and there's evidence there may have been another one flying over Santa Barbara or Santa Monica about the same time, and ostensibly the craft and its debris, or both craft and their debris, were recovered by the government. Why at that time did they not come out and say, we have recovered something and we're learning really great things about this, and we've got some technology transfer with Bell Labs, and boom, there you go. 5 years later, they patented the transistor right out of the blue. Gosh, this was low-hanging fruit off this ET technology. We're really going to town now, working for more universities to get involved. Why hide it? Why start this empire of secrecy and literally drink hundreds of billions of dollars of public money in the most secretive way that's ever been done? I mean, more secret than the Templars. Why do it? Why not just be open with the people and excite everyone and keep going?
One of the great historical questions that will be debated for 1,000 years, and that is, what would have happened in the 20th century if when the real modern flap, sighting flap, occurred in 47, what would have been, of course, the 20th century if they had gone ahead and just said, well, they're here. Okay, we won World War II, that's over. We got a little cool war that looks like it may get going here, but we also got ETs. And, you know, they will debate that. I think that it could have completely, it might have prevented the Cold War, could have saved trillions of dollars, it could have transformed everything. On the other hand, it might have triggered a nuclear war. Given the information they had, given the status quo of world governments and the United States at the time that the events took place in 47, I can't beat them over the head for the decision they made. They were frightened, they were scared. The timing was awful. I mean, they knew the Russians had the atom bomb secrets. They knew they had the hydrogen bomb secrets. They knew they had the German scientists. They knew they were building rockets. They knew it was coming, nuclear-tipped rockets, because we were doing the same thing. So Stalin was still in power. He's one of the truly great, you know, evil SOBs of all time. It was pretty apparent to everyone. And so we've got to study this. We've got to understand this. We've got to find out what's going on. There may be weapons potential here. And so we're going to classify the hell out of this. And they did. And what can I say? they classified everything. Anyway, and they built the national security structure, and they passed the National Security Act and all that stuff. It was timing. 47, 48, 49, 50, 51, 52. We understand that. And there was the Berlin crisis, the Berlin airlift, and then we had the Cuban Missile Crisis. And overall, everything that happened between 47 and the 60s kept reinforcing the fact that it was a dangerous world. We had the potential for nuclear annihilation, nuclear winter. Well, we finally figured that out in the 80s. And we got the ET thing, and we're still dealing with it. What can I say? That was a decision they made. I don't know if I'd have made a different decision. So the problem is not that they did something terrible in 47, that they created something, they started building something, and they're still building it. And it's gotten out of hand. And time has passed, and the Soviet Union's gone. And it's a new world. But the embargo lives on, and the national security state lives on, and the secrecy grows. So essentially, they built an edifice that is served its purpose, and they can't get rid of it. They're like the town that hired some real nasty guys to come in and get rid of some other nasty guys, and they cleaned out the town and everything, and now they got the guys they hired. They got to deal with them, and they're the problem. So we built a national security state. It won the Cold War. Now we can't get rid of it. So this is the short version of the second half of the 20th century. There are longer versions available at your local library. But this is the reason. It's that simple. It's not that complicated. It wasn't some mass conspiracy. It was some pretty sharp people that, you know, that had won World War II, were dealing with the early Cold War, and suddenly they're up to their eyebrows in extraterrestrials. They got vehicles crashing, they've got sightings all over the place, and they did the best that they could, and I don't fault them for it.
Well, but, now, let's ask this question, all right? Right now, apparently, all the downed craft are in their hands, all the technology's in their hands.
You can be pretty sure of that.
What happens if ETs fall out of the sky, or don't fall out of the sky, but land on purpose, and they don't land in government hands?
That could have happened. You know, if the Roswell, if the two vehicles that very likely crashed on that particular night in New Mexico had landed closer to town, like if one had kind of landed in the parking lot of the Ramada Inn or something,
the theater,
it's very possible that there would have never been a cover-up. There's never been an embargo.
Well, there's still time. There's still time. There's plenty of ETs out there, and there are plenty of expeditions coming up that are looking for them in remote places, and if they if they bring back evidence or they bring back an ET, and I'll put the open call out there again, you know, if you've got an ET in your neighborhood or you're dealing with one, he can come on this program with complete anonymity.
Absolutely.
And we'll put his word out there.
And you'll have some really excellent hors d'oeuvres in the green room.
There'll be green hors d'oeuvres.
Yeah, let me say something I've said many times, and I can't repeat it often enough. The ETs can blow this thing wide open any time that
they
want.
Sure they could.
And they do occasionally tweak us. That sighting in O'Hare was talked about for months, and now we got a mile-wide sighting, craft possible sighting over in England that's on the Internet. They can tweak us, but if they wanted to at any time, they could put some craft up there, it would right over the cities, and that would be the end of it. And I can tell you that is not what we want to happen.
I hope not.
It would be very bad, and here's why. If the government refuses to end the truth embargo, the first world governments continue to tell the people, nothing there, nothing to see, folks, move along, and then the ET suddenly parked those ships over the cities, the social contracts of all of those nations will be broken. And everyone will say, you didn't tell us about this, right? We're really upset with you. And we're scared. Yeah, we're scared of death.
Yeah.
In other words, it's a public relations disaster.
Yeah.
It is a political disaster. It is extremely upsetting and disrupting. What is supposed to happen, what I believe the ETs even want to happen, though I'm guessing, since they never returned my email, We need the first world nations to honor the social contracts and tell the people the truth. Let the people learn, digest, understand. There's plenty to learn about, right? Several thousand documentaries, over 10,000 published books, references, and papers, and many websites, of which mine is one, ParadigmResearchGroup.org.
All right, that's
And
it.
Once they learn about it, once they've digested it, Then when the contact takes place, the formal, here they are out in the open contact, people will go, okay, we knew that you were there, knew you could show up, government told us about it, that's cool, so now we get to find out more about you.
Right.
That's the way it's supposed to happen, and you better hope that's the way it does happen.
All right. My guest tonight has been Stephen Bassett, and I can't believe 3 hours blows by so fast on this program. Steve, thank you so much for coming on the program.
Thank you.
We will we'll definitely see you around. BJ, we'll see you around. And that's it for X Squared Radio tonight. Steve, we'll get together at one of these conventions, I'm sure.
I'll see you in Roswell. I'm going to be speaking there at the festival. The place is sold out solid.
I'll be there.
All right.
Thank you very much. That's it for X Squared Radio here on BBS Radio Network.
I can hear your whisper.
Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.
I can hear your whisper. Awaken me. Beauty of an angel. Color of a dream. And it feels like heaven touching you this way. I saw forever as you began to see. You love's constellation.